Hello, Proofuanians. This is Dan.
And this is Julia.
And we decided to talk to you a little bit about the PFW radio that we've got going on. Originally, this was going to be just for the Halloween ball. However, Julia and I had a couple of discussions and decided that since rock is just, you know, awesome, that we would actually make this a radio station devoted to Wizard Rock. As of yesterday, we have eliminated everything but the Wizard Rock from the station.
And I cannot begin to tell you how excited I am about that. Despite my undying love for Muggle Rock, I don't really need to hear it mixed in with my Wizard Rock, so I'm totally stoked that the Muggle Rock is gone and we are all Wizard Rock all the time. So yay.
Yes, until the Yule Ball, because there's not enough Christmas Wizard Rock, unfortunately.
I know. There's only two albums out that I know of.
Yes, but those will be on there for the Yule Ball.
Anyway, we are really, really excited about this new project that we've been doing with Puffle Radio. We're really excited because I know a lot of people just love Wizard Rock and don't necessarily have the money to buy all of the rock that they really want, but we do. So we are streaming it to you for your listening pleasure so you can share in the joy that is Wizard Rock.
Right, we've got about 40 bands on here, so if you wanted to buy each of these CDs, you'd probably be spending about $400. So here you can find it all for nothing. So
yeah, but you can't download it, though. You can, however, buy the songs on iTunes because we have all the bands that are on iTunes are linked on the site. So if you find a song that you really like, by all means, buy it and support the bands because they are just really cool people trying to have some fun and make a little bit of money. So if you find a song that you like and you want to buy it, you really should do that.
Yeah, we've already had a couple of people buy the Moaning Myrtles and Whomping Willows songs. So if you do want to buy them, you can buy them directly from iTunes.
Exactly.
So just to list some of the bands we've got playing right now, we've got the Remus Lupins, Harry and the Potters, Draco and the Malfoys, Oliver Boyd, of course, Ministry of Magic, the Moaning Myrtles, Whomping Willows, etc. We've got a list up on the forums if you want to check it out. Pretty much any Wizard Rock band you can think of that is established, plus a couple that aren't necessarily established yet, but are awesome.
Exactly. There's a lot of bands that you've probably never even heard of who are currently circulating through our playlists, including Justin Finch Fletchley and the Sugar Quills, the Creevy Crisis, who are a great new band, Owl Post, Split Seven Ways, Sue and the Hufflepuffs are great, and we've also got a few more coming. I've got some CDs in on order, and my computer suffered a tragic demise, and so as soon as I get it back, we'll be uploading the Hogwarts Trainwreck and the Chocolate Frogs, who Dan and I just saw live this weekend, and they were amazing. So you'll definitely want to stay tuned for that and see what happens with that because it will absolutely be worth your while.
Speaking of seeing things that are to come, Julia and I are starting up a Wizard Rock podcast, which
Yay!
Will be called Yes, which will be called the Pawncast of Rock. PWN that is.
Because we pawn.
Yes. Excited about this. We're going to have interviews from a couple different Wizard Rock bands. You'll have to stay tuned to find out who they are. And we're going to be straying a little bit from the norm of the Wizard Rock podcasts. So I'm hoping all of you guys stay and listen to that. That should be fun.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be wonderful. We've already got some amazing bands lined up for interviewing and for potential guest hosting as well. We cannot wait. We've got some really good ideas of things that we want to do, which will hopefully separate us from the other awesome Wizard Rock podcasts that are out there, which, by the way, if you guys don't listen to those, you totally should because they're really good. But we hope you listen to us too because you can never have enough Wizard Rock on your iTunes. So check us out and check them out because Wizard Rock is just awesome in general.
Yep, we'll give you more news about that as we come. But our first episode should come out the first week of the new year.
Yeah, we're really excited.
Now, back to the radio. We found this one really awesome band on MySpace. And they don't have a lot out, but what they do have out is just amazing. Their name is Peeved, and this is a song that not many of you know. Well, not many of you probably know. It's called The Ballad of Mr. Percy Weasley, and it is amazing.
Sit I agree. And it's the funniest Wizard Rock song I've heard in quite some time, which is saying something because I saw the Whomping Willows last weekend. So
And the Moaning Myrtles.
Oh. And a whole host of other bands. So the fact that we think this is pretty funny is really saying something. So you guys sit back and enjoy The Ballad of Mr. Percy Weasley by Peeved.
Sometimes times throughout our lives. We all meet idiotic fools, people who delight in nothing more than disregarding rules. So, if your present company just isn't quite what it ought to be, then maybe I can lend a hand. You see, I'm Percy Weasley, Mr. Percy Weasley, the kind of lad you'd invite around for tea. I'm pleasant and polite, I'm incredibly bright, and I've got a glowing record at the Magic Ministry. I'm Percy Weasley, not in the least bit sleazy, dapper in robes and even muggle suits. I'm amazingly delightful, my comments quite insightful, and a large number of O's in my owls and in my newts. I'm Percy Weasley, my music's never cheesy, my slender voice always hits the right notes. No matter what you've heard from George, please don't believe a word. I'm not that close with Aberforth, and I've never played with goats. I used to be head boy, you know. I will admit there have been times when things haven't turned out right. You might even say they turned out slightly wrong. But really, what the hell? On these thoughts we shouldn't dwell, especially when we're in the middle of such a jolly song. I'm Percy Weasley, if you're ever feeling queasy, I'll flick my wand and make you right as rain. It's really quite alarming just how good I am at charming. With me around, you'll never feel the urge to retch again. I'm Percy Weasley, Mr. Percy Weasley, but I really must be leaving presently. I'm truly pleased to have met you, but I doubt that could come close to how pleased you must have been to have met me. That's Percy.
Jen, be creative right now. Go.
Wait, I never know what to say. This is the part that I, like, always write out because I'm retarded and I can't remember.
Jen, be creative. Open the episode right now.
It's not fair for you to put me on the spot like this,
Ryan. Well, she's yawning. I'm out of people.
Go now.
Wait, I'm looking for my script. I know I've got it written here.
Jen, be unscripted. Just
I can't.
Oh,
Noah, come
my
here
and
goodness.
Open up the podcast for us.
No?
Noah. No. Are you excited about episode 33 of Potterfic Weekly?
What?
Are you excited about episode 33 of Potterfic Weekly?
What?
That's perfect.
You go,
what?
Is he building some type of fort?
He's got a weapon.
Hold on. We need confirmation. Is Noah excited about this episode?
Noah, are you excited about this episode?
Welcome to the place where the story never ends.
So run the next time you're feeling jealous of me, 'cause I'm so famous and awesome at Quidditch. Just remember that Slughorn's office, and you nearly drank yourself to death, but I saved your neck.
And welcome back to Potterfic Weekly. This is Ryan.
I'm Jen.
I'm Chi. Holy shit. I'm sorry. I'm not paying attention.
Who else do we have?
Do it again.
Mike. No, we're going to keep going. Mike's here. Who else is here? Noah's here. Hi, Noah.
Say hi, Noah.
Hi, Noah.
Okay, we seem to have a babysitting issue with this episode of the Potterfic Weekly. We're bringing all of our loved ones onto the podcast to talk about the year like none other. Kira's here also, right?
Yes, I'm here.
This is Kira from a landline. Last week we had Kira from a cell phone, and it didn't work out too well. Last week we had Chi on the...
Yeah, it worked a little better.
Yeah, we had Chi on the road to Kansas City last week. That was new for us, and I basically
That's
am just
exciting.
Rambling at
you
this point.
Experienced the rolling...
You should have jumped out of that car. There was something I didn't quite trust in that guy. You needed to jump. I didn't trust that guy at all.
Just because he hasn't read Harry Potter.
No, he read the last book, and that was it.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that.
All right. Well, just
Jeremy.
Yeah, you might want. Like I said, you'll break a hip, but you'll be fine. Meg, how are you?
I'm good.
What's new?
Nothing.
I have a 2-year-old with me tonight.
Oh God. I just don't know what to say to you. Better you than me. Better you than
yeah.
me.
Yeah. Well, it's in your future, Ryan, so look out.
Well, not in my immediate future, right? You haven't talked to anyone?
No. Okay. Oh, that's what I meant.
Everyone buys me diapers for my birthday next month. Well, I get concerned. All right.
Be sure you listen to episode Special Edition 7 very carefully.
Oh,
Ryan. No.
God. This is like that I Love Lucy episode where the father was the last to know. Okay. All right, so Meg, I hear you'll be back with when you have a babysitter. When your husband's home, you'll be back with us?
I will be back in about half an hour or so after
now,
this guy's gone to...
B-E-D?
B-E-D.
Okay. Now, I want to give you some foreknowledge of this. We're asking you about Ron when you get back.
Oh, all right.
All right, all right.
I'll talk about Ron when I get back.
Ron, glorious Ron.
All right. I thought you just said Ron Gonorrhea Ron.
How sexy.
Ryan named the episode.
There you go.
Better time.
Go me.
So meaty.
Talk to you in half an hour, Meg.
Noah, say bye.
Bye, Noah.
Bye. Good job. Bye. Okay, bye, guys.
Bye.
That poor misguided woman. She has no idea what she's in for. Actually, she does. I have no idea what I'm in for.
That's true.
Okay, Chi, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm just really tired. I had a fun day yesterday.
She's having a sick week. Jen's passed the baton to Lady Chi, and Chi sends me... Where is my cell phone? No, I have to share this with you people. Talk amongst yourselves. I'll be right back. Talk amongst yourselves. This is all staying in. I'll be right back. I'll just keep talking.
Okay.
Kira, do the weather. I'll be right back.
Kira, do
all
the
right,
weather.
All right, the weather. Let's see. I don't know. Here it is fairly warm. How about there? Wherever.
It's cold up here.
Where are you?
Well, I am in Utah.
In Utah. I was like, today's the first day that I wore a light jacket and needed it.
Really? I want to move to Texas.
We were like jumping up and down. It's like 60 and we were like, cold front, cold front! Like, squeeing and jumping. It was so exciting.
All right, I'm back,
it's
everyone.
It's 70 degrees in my apartment.
All right, I'm back. Everyone, I just want you to know, like, you listen to us every week for several hours, and your week ends there. You get us for 3 hours, and then you exhale, and then you go to the bathroom, and then you eat, and then you get on with your lives. This show, for us, lasts all week. When we're done with this one, we're starting the next one. So I'm going to read you several text messages I received to give you an idea of my sample week with Lady Chi. All right. This text message was received Monday morning at 8:39 a.m. I don't know where you were, but I was trying to sleep. Hey, buddy. Happy Monday. I want to bake a pie. Do you think Danielle would have any ideas? How was your weekend? Yeah, I haven't slept yet.
At what time in the morning?
That would be 8:39 in the morning. My time. That
oh,
would
my
be...
gosh.
Now, the following was received Tuesday morning at 7:51 a.m., which, Chi, I believe would be 10 minutes of 7 your time.
Yeah, yeah.
Happy morning, sunshine. Happy smut-giving. Insomnia stinks. I hope you have a good day. Chi, you realize every time you send me one of these, there's an annoying series of tones that accompanies it, right?
I have to say, I am so excited about the release of the Smut-Giving episode.
Well, here's the thing. If this episode... I don't know when we're actually releasing this episode. You may have already heard the Smut-Giving episode if you're over the age of 18. Or you may not.
Smut-Giving should be out on Thanksgiving, right, Ryan?
We don't know the order we're going to do it in yet. Because we're either going to put this episode out first or the Smut-Giving one. It depends when the editing gets done. But if you're over the age of 18... you know what we're talking about, and if you're not, Meg is going to come after you if you try and find out. And I just want to close with the following, and then we're going to jump into these chapters because I have a lot to say tonight. I received the following text message from Lady Chi yesterday evening as I was sitting down to dinner. So, I nearly fainted while vacuuming. How drama queen is that? That is my life, everybody.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You okay, Chi?
No, well, yeah, I'm fine. I guess I'll tell the story, because it sounds very dramatic, and it really was not. I guess my doctor is calling them mania. I just call it being chi. I have these periods where, like, I'm happy, and, during these times, I like to clean. And, yesterday I had orientation, and I had only eaten one meal, and I had only slept about 3.5 hours, because I haven't been able to sleep lately. So I was home and got back from orientation, and we had to clean because the exterminator guy was coming. And so my roommate was doing the kitchen, and I was drying dishes and taking care of the living room, and my apartment gets like a mess because we're all three college students, we're never here, and we dump stuff everywhere. So I was starting to feel kind of a little nauseous. Well, more nauseous, because nausea is kind of a fact of life anymore for me. And I was like, that's interesting. And I kept going, and I got out the vacuum cleaner, and I started to realize, like, vacuuming was a little more effort than I should normally be, you know? Breaking out into a sweat and, like, having trouble breathing while you're vacuuming. And so I was like, that's interesting. And I got over by the door, and the edges of my vision kind of started, like, go gray the way that, you know, your TV kind of does when your cable goes wonky. And then I started to get tunnel vision, and I realized that the only thing I could see was the vacuum cleaner. And I was like, I think I'll sit down now.
Stop laughing! She fainted! Oh no! We're like laughing at your pain and
no, all I'm thinking of right now is I made the right decision in making her a full-time host.
Yeah, I know. I sat down and I put my head between my knees, and my roommate is just like bebopping away, like cleaning the kitchen. And I was like,
bebopping?
Yeah, bebopping. I was like, because she was listening to her iPod.
Stop.
Sorry.
She was listening to her iPod, and I couldn't get her attention, and I just wanted to get off the floor. Because it was, like, really comfortable, and there was a solid wall there. And she's like, Brittany! And she turned around, and she's like, what? I was like, can you get me a Sprite? I'm just going to sit here for a couple of minutes. And she goes, okay, are you feeling all right? And I was like, I think I passed out. She goes, okay. Like, great. So I called my doctor, and I was all freaking out, and then she freaked out. She's a freaker outer. I shouldn't have called her. And then I called my mom. And
your doctor freaked out because she's a freak outer?
Yeah. Well, she's one of those
women. She's in the wrong profession.
I'm like, wow.
You can tell that my doctor is like a grandmother. She's one of those people that, like, you'll call her and you're like, I have a concern. Will my medicine make me faint? And she'll respond with, you really need to come in and see me because I'm very concerned about you. And I'm like, that's great because I'm concerned about me too. But answer the question.
Oh, I was like, I went and saw my butt doctor today. And like, if they're concerned, like, talk about being...
They have concerns about your ass? What?
No!
It's good that we can laugh about this.
I know, it's very important. Please continue, Chief.
Hold on. Wait, I want to know why Jen's butt... Hold on, I just want to know why Jen's butt doctor is concerned.
Because she's the freak-out kind of doctor. And I was like, well, I was thinking, it'd be awful if my butt doctor, who handles, goes in people's butts every day and looks at poop and all kinds of crap like that, no pun intended. If he freaked out...
What the hell are we talking about?
That would be really
We have 28 chapters to get to in like an hour. We're talking about Jen's butt torture.
No, I'm sorry. Chi, please continue. I like that you have a concerned doctor. I like
oh,
that
I have
kind.
A concerned doctor. No, I hate that kind of doctor because it makes me feel like smothered. And she's
really?
One of those ones that like you'll call her and you'll leave a message with her. I have a concern about my medication. Can you give me a call back? And if she doesn't get you a hold of you the first time, she'll call again and again and again and again.
Okay,
yeah, I guess. And she's always, but it always seems like she's like dreadfully concerned that I've dropped dead because she's put me on the wrong medication or something. And this is not good because I don't know if you people can tell, but I'm kind of excitable. And get like
excitable in what way?
Like, I don't know. She just always makes me feel like I'm on the urge of losing my mind. Like my sanity is a very fragile thing. And I only get this feeling around this woman. Like normally I feel like
that's
I'm
how I feel capable. Around all you people every day. Are you seeking medical attention?
I guess. Anyway, so I went in and I saw her today and she goes, well, she goes, I just want to talk to you because, and this is the way that she talks as if I was dying to me all the time. I'm just going to talk to you because I'm concerned that you're on the wrong medication. And, you know, you just seem like one of those people that hides your feelings very well.
Does she listen to the podcast?
In the head for talking so damn slow. Get to the freaking point. Am I dying or not?
Did she know that we did a half hour in your toilet 2 weeks ago?
She backs this up with, and then there's a long pause. The sigh is never good.
And, I just really want to know if you're telling me the truth.
That's like me. By the time she asks you the question, you forget what the hell the question was.
telling the truth about what? About you fainting?
I'm going, what are we talking about? A, B, C, or D, because I came in with like 5 concerns today, and I'm pretty sure all 5 of them are pretty damn real. And she goes, well, I'm pretty sure that last week my nausea was probably food poisoning, but she's concerned that it lasted 3 days, because food poisoning usually only, it runs its course in 12 to 48 hours. And I'm going, yes, I know that. I worked in food safety. I'm very well acquainted with food poisoning. And so I thought that maybe perhaps it wasn't. And she goes, well, you know, maybe it was a stomach virus. But, you know, now I'm concerned that we don't have you on the right medication. And, you know, maybe we've misdiagnosed you. And so I'm going to send you to see an actual doctor. And this is the point at which I realized my doctor is not an actual doctor. Like, she doesn't
have a nurse practitioner.
She has it. I was seeing a nurse practitioner, at which point I wanted to like slam
well,
my
no,
head.
Nurse practitioners are actually very knowledgeable.
I know.
I mean,
they're knowledgeable and they're great people, and she's a lovely woman. It's just that I had been feeling smothered by her. I don't know if you can tell.
I feel smothered by her, and I'm in Massachusetts. I mean,
I'm just like,
I like concerned doctor. I like it so much better than mine, who you have to make an appointment, and then like an hour later, they're like, I guess we'll see you now.
I'm blown away that half of our hosts have been potentially misdiagnosed in the last week.
I know. I have to say, I don't trust nurse practitioners. No. I know, because most of my things are, nope, not even the general doctor can figure out. I always have to go to the specialist of this and that for them.
Well, Jen is an anomaly. I mean,
I am. My presence is just like lightning.
So now, I would like to point out, last time I was in the hospital, they never could figure out what's wrong with me. But anyway, right. Now I am scheduled to see a quote-unquote real doctor. And
you should get to be able to take a test soon. When they test for bipolar and other kinds of chemical, you have to take like a written exam. Seriously.
Yeah, I thought you meant she could become a real doctor. I got
well,
so confused.
She's going, I'll be a real boy eventually.
No.
She goes, well, you know, have you ever had periods of mania? And I'm like, well, I'm a woman.
That's mania.
It's mania. Yeah, well, like,
all right,
well, like apparently mania.
Episode 29 is a good example of mania.
What did I do in episode 29?
I don't remember.
I believe episode 29 was the scathed incident.
Yeah. Well, apparently the fact that I will like be happy and be really happy for 5 hours and then like crash and crash hard and become episode 29 chi for like 12 hours is not a really great thing. And the fact that like I haven't been sleeping, and she's just concerned. And at this point, I'm too tired to be concerned. I just want the world to stop spinning. So, more updates on that later. We'll figure out what's wrong with me. Hopefully tomorrow. I have my doubts though. And, I will hopefully return to real life.
Be positive. Be positive.
I will be positive.
Be positive. But if they tell you that you're dying from depression, get a second opinion.
I will. Cause gosh darn it.
This shouldn't be so funny, but like on some level.
It has to be. It has to be funny.
It has to be funny.
Jen, how are you feeling this week?
Oh, I'm fine. I went and saw my butt doctor today, which is, I had a procedure last week. And I was under, and apparently, this is the one, I don't know if I told y'all, but I woke up and I was professing my love to him.
Yes,
you just did. Telling him that I wanted to be together, but the only thing that would stop our love was the fact that I'm married. Which I'm really happy that I can stay,
loyal to your husband.
Loyal to my husband, even under medication. It's really, that's a good leap of faith. I feel so much better now inside. So anyway, it was really embarrassing, and he recognized me right off, which is just great. And
you should give him like the first season of the podcast on CD. Just be like,
well, no, it was one of those like he turned around and he saw me going into the room, and he goes, "Oh, hi!" And like he made a point to come over and shake my hand and like put his arm on my arm, and it's so nice to see you again. Just go in there and wait, and I'll be in there in a minute. And it like. That didn't happen before. And so he was just really nice because obviously my obsession with his love is, I'm sure he gets that all the time though. He's so cute. He looks like that guy from Heroes, Suresh. Oh my gosh. He was just so cute. And I had a long talk today and it was a good outcome. And so things are looking, they're still on the upside of the 50. So yay. But anyway, yeah, I got to see my really hot doctor today. My butt.
Well, that's always exciting. I know.
It's lovely because they draw pictures for you. I don't know if y'all go to other doctors, but when you go to specialists, it's really fun because you get like Pictionary doctors, which is really fun because every time you go into the different doctor, they draw what's wrong with, okay, here is your ovaries, and here is your this and that, and this is where the area that's wrong, and this is the area that had pus that's leaking, and this is the area that, you know what I mean? And it's like, I don't know, I feel so stupid because I'm sitting there, and I don't know whether to look at the information sheet that they gave me, or look at the drawing that he's drawing, or look at his face, because he has the miraculous talent of drawing while looking at my face, like staring into my eyes, and when I look at his face, I get lost in his eyes, and I'm like, oh, and then I feel like hitting myself in the head because I'm like, okay, oh my god, because he is cute, but he knows that I'm cute. Now I'm turning red, and should I just look at the Pictionary drawing?
And then you go home, and your husband's like, what's wrong with you? Are you going to live? And you're like,
I know. Here's the drawing. This is what's wrong. And then that's when James just like explains it to me, and I get it. But
Jen, are you going to live? Here's a picture of my left ovary. Like,
but you know, like the books and novels where the handsome hero sweeps down and he, you know, he kisses the girl and then leaves her and she's just sitting there and she's just in awe and like, oh, and somebody else comes and like steers her and moves her down and like she comes back to reality and she just is blushing and, but she has no idea of what just happened. Like it's sort of like when I got married, you go up there and you think, I'm going to remember all this. And you get up there and I was like, oh my God, say my lines. Oh, we're married. Okay. And then like afterwards I breathe. But it was very much like that going to see this butt doctor. So
I just can't believe we've been talking about butt doctors for 30 minutes.
What is his real? I don't know what his real title. I can't remember.
We're gonna call him the butt doctor.
Okay, because that's really the only.
Kira, Mike, how are you?
Got the flu, but otherwise I'm good.
You have the flu,
sweetie? No.
Yeah.
It's spreading.
Did you have a flu shot?
It's spreading.
I did not.
That's
probably why I have it.
Oh, so now you, right? Puff causes long-term illness.
Hold on. Kira, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
You are the most able-bodied person on this podcast right now. I just thought you'd like to know.
Yay, Kira.
Trying not to laugh out loud too loud.
All right. No, laugh out loud. It's hilarious.
We're talking about... 2 weeks ago, we thought Jem was going to die, and now we're laughing about her butt doctor problems. This is a good thing.
There's no problems. It's just love.
There you go. All right. Let's jump into the chapters for tonight, because we have a billion of them, and I have to work tomorrow. Let me even just start here. And for everyone, we didn't announce this earlier, and I'll put like an announcement at the beginning of this episode, maybe. We're going to follow this episode tonight with an interview with Aspen, and I cannot pronounce her beta's name. And
Mercury.
What is it?
Mercury.
Okay. I keep wanting to call her Mercedes, and I can't stop.
I do that too, all the time.
I've been saying Mercedes all day, and so it's Merc. Okay, spell it out like phonetic. Like, what's it? It's Merc.
M-E-R-C.
Yeah, Merc.
R-E-D-I.
Mercredi. Mercredi.
I don't know. She'll have to get her to pronounce it, but I think it's Mercredi.
Mercredi, all right.
Because that's the French word for Wednesday, and that's how you say it.
We're having an interview with Aspen in Wednesday.
Is it really? Is that really? Yeah.
I thought you pronounced it different in French. Though I failed French, so what do I know?
I can't even pronounce it in English. All right.
Well, I mean, that's the that's how I would say it with my English accent, and no, I will not bust out my French accent
for you. It's Lundi, Mardi, Mercredi.
Lundi, Mardi, Mercredi. Judy.
Dimanche.
Yeah. Samedi, dimanche. Yeah.
So she'll be on the podcast later is where I was going with that.
Yeah.
Vendredi.
To be Mercredi, I want to be Lundi.
Nothing would give me more pleasure.
I like
the
name, but I didn't realize it was. I'm going to ask her if it has any relation to the French Wednesday.
I love how we have like an hour with these two authors after we do like this 11-part series, and our first question is, what is the source of your name?
Is it Wednesday? Are you like, I keep thinking of like the Addams Family. Is it the Addams Family?
Yes.
Uh-huh. That has Wednesday. And I always thought it was pretty, and I never associated it with the day of the week, but it is.
You never associated Wednesday with the day of the week?
No, because I just thought it was pretty. Right. It was just,
I thought you meant Wednesday itself and not Mercury. Okay. We gotta move on. All right. All right.
The chapters.
The chapters. Now I have to tell you, this is my emotional state reading. And this week I've actually read everything. I held up the podcast tonight to finish reading them, and I felt bad not realizing we were going to do butt sex for an hour. So I could have just,
we're not
butt
sex. Stop it.
Butt doctors. We did butt sex back in 7. All right. So I've read every line of the chapters. Now, starting the chapters tonight, I enjoyed everything all the way through. Now, the part about Harry, and I'm told I'm not allowed to say cutting, but I'm going to say cutting anyway. Those chapters
just
were
S-I.
What am I saying?
S-I.
Why am I saying self-injury?
I think it's self-infliction.
Self-infliction? Okay. S-I.
I don't know. It could be self-injury.
Now, is that?
I thought it was self-injury. I just know it's S-I.
No, I know nothing about this, but is that the more socially accepted term?
S-I is, the new socially acceptable term for, needling yourself. Although, what, like, the street term would be, like, Harry is a cutter, or Harry is a...
cutter is, like, the street slang. But, right. Like, the... I think it's S-I.
What do we wish to use?
Let's say S-I. Let's use S-I.
We're going to use S-I.
He's not really a cutter.
He's more of a poker.
He's a stabber.
He's a poker. All right. So those I actually listened to. I actually listened to them at work today. And I'm going to tell you, I actually, this morning I had a long day at work, and I didn't have a lot of time to read today. So I was hoping to listen to as much of it as I could in my iPod. And I had actually gone on to the website trying to see if those chapters had been turned into audiobooks yet. And obviously they haven't. And I ran into some of the artwork for these chapters. And I saw artwork that implied to me that Harry would go down that route. I'm like, huh. And when I got to that point, I wasn't, originally I didn't like it, but it was so well written, it may have been my mind. So we'll get into that. But long story short, as we finished the fic tonight, I really enjoyed the ending of it. And you've seen me go up and down and up and down and up and down over the last, 10, 11 episodes. And I really think it ended, at least for me, as someone who's, this is my first time reading something which isn't traditional canon, it ended on a very positive note for me, and a lot of the problems I think I had earlier on in the series were addressed by the ending. A lot of them were structural, and it's just one of those things you're either going to like it or you're not. But I definitely enjoyed the story. I didn't
sometimes you finish a fic and you're like, oh, thank God it's over. I really actually enjoyed the ending. Even the last few lines I thought were great. So I had a really good experience reading these final chapters, and I have a lot of stuff I want to talk about tonight. But you guys, will you?
Are you going to read the sequel, Ryan, do you think?
I will read the sequel. I may wait until it's finished because I'm not really a writing in progress kind of person.
Cass announced on her Yahoo group that there are two chapters. She thinks two chapters remaining.
Okay. And then is she starting Brothers in Arms? Do we know?
I don't know. I think Kira, I think she took a break after a year to then before she started Summer. She may take a short break. I don't know. Do you know, Kira?
I haven't heard anything, so I honestly don't know. Sorry.
I don't know either. I know I always take a break between
novels. I know that it's all planned out for the most part. I just don't know how soon she's going to be writing it.
Right.
Yeah. Does anyone want to start off tonight somewhere?
So we're going to start right at chapter 5, or 85 in our discussion.
Oh, God, I'm sorry, chapter 5 will never
make it. Yeah, we'll never make it. We have so much to talk about.
Oh,
Snape,
God.
Go. No, seriously. I think the big issue primarily in this, the first part of this chapter, is Harry's continuing deterioration of his relationship with Professor Aaron Aran. And, who doesn't hate him? He's a right prick. But, the interesting thing that I thought, it really put me in a good mood, to start my reading last night as I read all 11 chapters for episode, was Harry and, McGonagall's interactions. And particularly the way that McGonagall handles Aaron, in his examination, of Harry there, where Harry has to go to McGonagall and explain to her what's going on explain to her why he hasn't gone to Snape. And I think it's interesting that McGonagall has made the journey now where she is very much, well, why aren't you getting help from your father? And it's interesting as we come to the end of the fic, all the people that are very much on Harry and Snape's side now. McGonagall, Ron, Ron, not so much. Hermione, people are very much rooting for this relationship, which is an interesting.
Well, that's the thing, too. I mean, a lot of the stuff when you read these chapters, you'd have to know that if any of the events of this story happened earlier in the year, the outcome would have been very different. Like, if Lucius had taken Harry and Draco earlier in the story when Harry thought that Draco was a backstabbing liar, obviously, things wouldn't have worked out the way they did. I think the characters needed, the trio, mm-hmm. I was predicting would, be written out of the storyline as of, chapter 30 to chapter 40, and it didn't happen, and the trio was very much a part of the story. So I think that when you look at the whole plot, I think that time and that space where everyone just didn't like it and then kind of accepted it and then kind of reconsidered, I think that was very well played. The cool thing I thought about having McGonagall here is McGonagall, really is one of those characters that was written out of this fic pretty much. She was the Gryffindor head of house. She was a support mechanism for Harry. So for Snape to become so prominent in the story, she really had to be put on the back burner. So I think
Gryffindor was. Hogwarts was.
Yeah, everything.
She,
yeah.
The school surrounding, and I like, well, this story focuses on the home life, getting a separate. So I don't think she was cut out. I just think the story was in a different.
Well, I say cut out in the way that the trio was cut out for most of it. The traditional, the Weasleys, the traditional people who stick up for Harry, who, make up Harry's support mechanism, were replaced in this story. And then when the new mechanism was in place, the family unit, Draco and Snape, they were kind of brought back into the fold. So it was great to see, Harry stick up to McGonagall and Harry, say, I need you to do this for me. Please don't dismiss me. I need you to just come to class. And then for McGonagall, who's probably said, many things behind closed doors to Dumbledore, complaining, openly.
Do you really think? I think that's a good thing to bring up.
Do I think that she did that during?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that as soon as Snape said he wanted to adopt Harry, I think McGonagall, obviously, from matters of house pride and even, as someone who stuck up
for Harry, she did the traditional thing and said, Snape hates Harry. We all know Snape hates Harry. You know, Severus is very, he's an order member, but he's very unfair to Harry. We don't think this is a good thing for him. He needs to be
around his friends.
But at the same time. But no, but everyone did that. I mean, the Weasleys finally, you know, like Molly wrote the great letter to Harry saying, hey, look, you know, I know that, I know Severus and I know that this is something that's good for you and he can offer you things that we can't. But everyone, like, okay, just everyone's perspective is that Snape and Harry hate each other, that Snape is a petty man, that Snape, you know, everything that we think about him in the canon going into, say, book 7, book 6.
Isn't everything with McGonagall up till book 7, like, McGonagall is supportive of Professor Snape?
She is supportive. Well,
she doesn't say anything against him.
Well, she's professionally supportive, but you have to believe, though, that, you know, She McGonagall isn't a slouch, and McGonagall gets reality. And while she will tolerate Snape as a fellow professor, and while she will, you know, respect him as an order member, she, you know, doesn't have a warm place in her heart for Snape. You know, as she may not have a warm place in her heart for a lot of people. She's very strict. She's the old,
right,
you know.
Right.
So I think that when she she gets the way that Snape is to his students. Like, take Philosopher's Stone. You know, Snape, you know, gives Slytherin points, you know, hand over fist, takes them from Gryffindor. He's monumentally unfair to Gryffindor, and he favors his own. And McGonagall takes points from her own because it's the right thing to do because she needs to teach them a lesson. So she's she's not going to play his game, though. So McGonagall always, you know, she got what Snape was doing, but she wasn't going to play along with it because she knew it was right. So I think my thought is in this one, McGonagall would really see that Snape, you know, has been just an awful guy to Harry all this time, and she would have concerns. She would want, you know, Gryffindor to handle this, you know, Gryffindor to take care of Gryffindors and so forth. But I think, you know, now that we're in chapter 85, I think that she would see reality and see that she was mistaken, and I think she'd be very much in Harry's corner now.
I have to say that in the story, with so much that's happened to Harry that didn't happen to Harry in canon, like, wasn't McGonagall there when Solwayne first happened and he's screaming for Snape and even Poppy's like, this isn't normal. Wasn't McGonagall in the room?
She, I think, was referenced.
I can't remember. Was she there?
There was a reference that she was only there once. She only came to visit him once. I don't remember if she was there. I do remember at the time that Poppy thought that Harry was calling out Snape's name as though he needed to be protected from Snape because Snape was the one who, quote unquote,
infected. Right. No, I knew that.
I don't think she was actually in the room. Do you guys remember? I don't think she was in the room.
No, I think she was only there once.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, I think I'd always thought that, like, in this story, because Snape is such a, he seems like such a better person in this story, I think, than he did a little bit in canon, if that makes any sense, a little bit more of a grown up, a little bit more mature and together. But I think in this story, I think I had it in my mind. I think I argued with myself on these two points, which I totally have had the thought with Ryan, like I've been in agreement. But I've also argued that maybe McGonagall in this didn't have any issues with Dumbledore because she knew that Snape really is a good guy. And she knew that, I think McGonagall's the one that kind of, if somebody passes, gives it a check mark, she's going to go with it because that's the rules. And it's very, like, I'm pretty positive that if she thought the caseworkers and all those people gave Snape custody, she would just accept it. And
oh, I don't think she would just accept it. I think McGonagall's like the woman that you see in Starbucks who's reading the New York Times and sees what the state legislature did today and is screaming, those damn idiots reading the paper. I think she's a very cynical person. I think she really, like, she'll be the person that she'll stick up for the one kid in school who everyone else hates because she knows that one particular kid and she knows they're right. And she'll stare down everyone else in the school to defend that one person. But she also is, she'll take on Dolores Umbridge. She won't.
Yeah.
I don't
think that she accepts the status quo as unchangeable.
But there hasn't been a scene.
That's the thing. I think if she did have an issue,
I thought yeah. I think Aspen would
no.
be thorough
do you,
enough to.
Do you remember?
I
no, do you remember when
there is a scene?
No, there is a scene when they say that the McGonagall like marches into the common room and says, "For reasons passing understanding, Harry will be living in the dungeons and collects his things and so forth." And you know she's very and she's like complaining to the students that this is happening because you know her appeals were unanswered. She very much did not like it in the beginning. That was her constant, you know, disapproval, and the disapproval she expresses about having to bring Ron and Hermione down, and we'll see maybe later and so forth. I know there's some plot in there too when Snape wanted them to be left away, but it was very clear to me reading those chapters, and maybe Aspen can address it later in the episode, but it was very clear to me reading through the chapters that McGonagall in the beginning had strong concerns, just like everyone else did. And those concerns.
Well, that's very in character.
I think by chapter 85.
I had remembered that scene, and I knew that I had argued with myself whether or not she did that because Dumbledore at the time in certain scenes seemed not totally against the idea of the adoption, but not for it. And that if somebody else had expressed concern to an issue that he was already feeling concerned on, I don't know what would have been more. Maybe she thought it, but maybe she did hold her tongue for a while. I don't know.
She's an old softie. I'm sure she'd let Dumbledore know that she had concerns having to let Harry and his state go to dungeons with Draco Malfoy, who's, you know, never, you know, shown him, you know, an ounce of respect.
Well, he's a cruel boy, or he was.
Yeah, I mean,
misunderstood, not cruel.
Oh, God.
He was cruel, just like Snape was cruel.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't think Draco was ever cruel. I think he felt bullied.
I think he was a bully. Don't you think?
Draco up until... In canon up until here, Draco was certainly...
All the mudblood crabs.
Oh, sure. Who's the one that always gets beaten up, though? That's what I always... You know, who's the one at the end of the day who always...
Karma.
Yeah, I mean...
He's a pretty bad bully if he's a bully. That's all I can say.
What's that, Kira?
What, Kira?
I just said he's asking for it every time.
Yeah.
I know, it's so true.
Thousands of angry, you know, people taking to the streets with bats can't be wrong.
But anyway, let's move on. We've talked. We went on McGonagall. The issue of the
Minerva McGonagall, a year like none other. A retrospective on one Irish school marm's role in the
Scottish, isn't she?
Yes, she's Scottish. Damn it! I almost <got it. laughs>
Like the Irish wouldn't be so forgiving.
I'll bring something up.
What do you got?
Is it just me, or does Lucius seem much more of a bad guy than the Dark Lord does? Even like
Lucius is a freaking child molester in this thing. Oh my God!
He's molesting Harry.
Well, it's gone to the point where I think at this point he is trying to hurt Harry any way he can, and I think that is like the last possible means of hurting someone is putting them in that kind of vulnerable position, and that's what he was doing. It was a strategic move, I think.
It was.
Not necessarily a perverse...
Well, think about it.
I don't know. I think it was kind of both.
It probably was.
Well, just don't forget, in this story, he's the only villain. I mean, Voldemort was in the story for a chapter, and I believe he sat in a chair and patted Lucius on the head and got thrown in his ass and had to go to the butt doctor, and that was all. Now he needs a bone marrow transplant. And
well, I think in this story, Voldemort was the character that he was in books 1 through 5, or 1 through 3. You know, a presence, but not necessarily a...
He had no presence. This is the Voldemort of book 6. I mean, he was in one chapter. Harry's scar isn't blazing. He pops out of Harry's forehead once, and he is never heard from again.
And the fiery, scary thing.
Yeah, Lucius Malfoy is the only villain in this story, and he's a great one. He is not Bullhorn Voldemort, who, you know, I thought was a freaking idiot. I mean, Voldemort in canon could have been the Prime Minister of Venezuela. I mean, it's like, hello, but...
I have to say, I love the interaction between... I love reading the bad guy, and I love feeling the hatred for the characters, because I think when a bad guy is written well enough, everyone knows that's a bad guy, you know. And I think I have to say that as much as I like JKR's writing, Voldemort has to be one of the lamest villains ever.
I have to do it. You have 1 hour.
I feel like this Lucius is sort of like the Darth Vader before the Return of the Jedi. Before we knew he had a heart. Let me make a Star Trek reference.
Okay.
Who's really bad? Oh, he's like the head. Well, the Klingons even turned good in 6.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I can't think of a really bad guy.
He's like Spock. Khan. He's like, what?
No, Spock is great.
He's Have like, you ever seen an hour of Star Trek?
I thought Spock was like super like manipulator guy.
Okay, can what? I just tell you, I have to tell you this. For those of you who have watched Babylon 5, you will laugh at this. For 99.9% of you, you're going to have no idea what I'm saying. In the first season of Babylon 5, the lead character is Commander Sinclair. And in from the beginning of the second season also, they, you know, Commander Sinclair, you know, leaves the show for a while, and they bring on a Captain Sheridan. And played by Bruce Boxleitner. And Mike is watching the show, and he's trying to guess what's to come. And he has, every time he references this Captain Sheridan that he accidentally saw in IMDb, he refers to that bastard Sheridan. Like, Sheridan could be, like, you know, like a guardian angel. He could be a priest. You have no idea. That bastard Sheridan. He's already decided he'll be, like, the arch villain. So, he's guessing that Spock is. We're doing butt doctors. We're doing Spock.
Okay, we have to do cheese story thing. We're on 85. What else happens on chapter 85? Snape has to slice off his dark mark and put it in the writhing jar of dark marks.
Yes,
and
yes, and Draco gets sent up. Yes, Draco gets sent up to Gryffindor Tower to fetch Harry. And is nearly assassinated by Gryffindor House, and I just found that amusing. I'm not really sure why. And I thought that I loved the just the way it was written is that you have to literally chop the dark mark off, and it's put into like this acidic vat filled with like screaming dark marks. I mean, that's just such a great.
It is, isn't it? It's so imaginative.
And I love even the reference later on when they're talking about, like, you know, sending out, you know, fake Death Eaters, you know, to infiltrate Voldemort's ranks. Snape's like, I have a few more of those dark marks if you ever need them. Like, you should sell them on eBay or something. But I just thought the reference was great. And I really like the way she writes Snape because he's always so in control. So when he's not in control anymore and you can tell he's very weakened as to the fact that, like, part of his arm is just burned off, he still seems like the most powerful guy in the room. I just really enjoyed the way she had written the character of Snape there. I'll call him Severus, too, just to make my whole...
Aw, Sebby Seb.
Uncle Seb.
I thought Harry's reaction was pretty realistic, too. I have to kill Voldemort now because... Look what he's doing to you, Snape. Was that this chapter?
He always wants to kill Voldemort. If it's a saving people thing, it could have happened anywhere.
Yeah, I think he has that thought in this chapter, though.
Does he? Well, Harry has so many brilliant ideas in these chapters. It's hard to keep track of what brilliant idea led.
Well, he feels this is just another way that Harry puts it on himself that it's somehow his fault.
I'm waiting for Harry to be responsible for global warming.
Well, see, but this is all things that lead up to his self-infliction. Like, this is, I'm serious, like, how do people keep dealing with stuff and more stuff and more stuff and more stuff? And, I mean, you either find a way to release some of that dark or you go insane. And it's really...
Well, know what the thing, I mean... Just to jump, we're going to jump a little bit out of order a little bit here, but the self-infliction was the toughest part to read in these chapters. Now, in the beginning, when it started to get to that, I rolled my eyes as a reader. And I think the reason I did that first off was, you know, like, oh my God, there's like 3 chapters left and now he's cutting himself. It's like, you know, how much can this one character take? I mean, it just seemed like it was just, you know, piling on, but I thought about that, and it's natural, because we've said this many times before. Harry Potter, should he be a real person, would be institutionalized by this point for having to go through what he goes through, given his background, given his, you know, the way he was raised, given all the experiences he's had up until this point. This kid would be, you know, completely unable to, you know, fit into ordinary society. He would be on every type of medication you can imagine, and he would be in therapy every day. Like the fact that he's as well as he is makes him less of a real person. So the fact that Aspen chose to address that, I think, is a very realistic step. And I think, and I was talking to Chi about this earlier today, the way in which she wrote it, the way in which she put that into the plotline, I think was incredibly well done and very true to life. And the issue I had probably most as a reader is that when I tune into this series, it's a fantasy series. So there's magic and there's, you know, this hidden world and there's these kids doing extraordinary things. So to some extent, I look for a small bit of that to be the fantasy type story. And this was straight, you know, human development. And this was
It's angst. It's angst that people can relate to.
Yeah, it'd be like reading a Harry Potter story, like you were saying last week, Jen, about Harry, you know, having cancer. And it's a story that we can all relate to in our own lives, but is it something that you want to read in a fan fiction? And many people do, many people don't. I think it's the first time I did. This is the first time I read a fic this angsty, so for me it was new. But you know what? The best stories I like are the ones that are true, where the magic doesn't matter, like After the End, where it's people with real problems that have magical window dressing, but they're real problems. So you know what? I think maybe I was not expecting it because it was so late into the story, and that's usually when I'm used to the cleanup and the story winding down, and that's when the biggest plot arc yet got thrown in there. But you know what? I do appreciate it, and I think it was very well written.
I think it's important to acknowledge that I never felt like, and I'm going to use this word as a stereotype, the emo type kid, where there's so many stories you read where it's like the main character, you follow him around and like life gets so hard and everything's just so bad. They just have to start cutting themselves, that kind of thing. I like the way that she wrote it in that he wasn't doing it to inflict pain necessarily. He was doing it because he felt guilty for not feeling emotional pain.
He was numb.
He needed to feel, well, I think a part of it is he was numb, but a part of it, I think he felt that he needed to be punished in some form so that he would feel bad, to show himself that he still could feel guilty and horrible for killing someone.
Have you either of you ever known a cutter?
Yes.
Ever?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. One of my math tutors.
Okay, I about lost a best friend to this. So, I thought that it was the way that she described the mental process of it, I thought was very, you know, very, very accurate. The itching in the arms, the way they hide it, you know.
Well, it's totally from Harry's perspective, too. We're seeing Harry. So we're not seeing, you know, Snape and Draco at the table saying, Harry's being distant lately. You see Harry and why he wants to be by himself, and you see how everyone responds to that to Harry, but you see it from the perspective of the person who's inflicting, you know, harm on themselves. And for someone like me who has never done that, it's I didn't, until I talked to you. Yeah, like I've known people, but until I talked to people who have done it, I'm like, is this accurate? I don't know. I mean, I don't know what it feels like, but I can see why it's so well written that you can see why you can put yourself in that person's place almost and see why they make the decisions they make. One thing that I thought really jumped out at me was that Harry in the beginning, you know, this is his quest to conquer his fear. And this is, you know, this isn't, you know, something.
That's what he tells himself.
Yeah, he tells himself that. But then at the same time, he's hiding from everybody. And he,
right.
This is my bold quest to conquer my fear.
But I don't think he was ever suicidal. I don't think it ever got to that point. And the second that it even got remotely, the second it got even remotely scary and dangerous, he immediately, like, it was good that we saw the thought process of him realizing that, wow, this is bad. Something's not right here. I need help.
And I think my fear going into it was, and we talked about this a little bit last week, part of the way Aspen writes is that she wants it to be a realistic thing. And most, you know, you never solve your problems in 30 minutes. And, you know, real issues, you know, take years to resolve. It's kind of like on someone complained once, Jen, you watch Battlestar Galactica, there's a father and son, you know, relationship on that show. And it starts off very angsty and very strained, and they grow very close. And then they get very, you know, distant again, and then they get very close again. And then they break And it, like, happens over and over. And someone wrote, well, this is really inconsistent writing. And the response from the writer was, you ever have a fight with your father? Like if you have a problem
Seriously,
with a person,
yeah.
you fix it and you put it all behind you, then the next week you're doing the same damn thing again. It's not inconsistent. It's human. So you know, I was, and that's the way Aspen writes. And my fear actually was, it was difficult for me to hear it because it was not that it was so graphic, but it was so realistic. You don't want to picture Harry like that. Like, it's almost like, you know, people, you know, give this kid cancer and they make him, you know, cut himself and they, you know, have him be tortured by Death Eaters. And they put this one character through so much stuff in all these fan fictions that to me, I like, sometimes I think, you know, I just like, it's like you so much, like, granted it's all different stories and they all, you know, cancel each other out, but it's like, I don't like hearing Harry do that. Like, it just seems like that's too much for the character sometimes, even though it's completely realistic in this context. And I was, what I feared was it would be a lot of Harry does it, hides from people, people express annoyance with him, then he does it again. And I was just afraid it was going to go on for 3 or 4 chapters, just, you know, him doing the same thing over and over again. And it didn't, yeah, but that was my reading it. Like literally, if I was reading it, I would have jumped ahead. And I would have skimmed, and I would have jumped down chapters because I just didn't want to read. But I was listening to it, so I couldn't do that, so I had to hear everything.
I have to say, the part that really stands out in my mind about these chapters, and there's quite a few, but the major one is the one where Harry goes and he knocks on Snape's door, and he is just waiting to get some kind of reaction from Snape. He's waiting to get yelled at, or he's waiting to get thrown out or something. And Snape, I think I try to imagine the circumstance of me going to my parents about with something like this. And I can honestly say that my parents wouldn't act nearly as mature or rational as Snape does. And I like reading about the good parenting skills that he sometimes rarely show. I mean, it's so rare that you get to see a moment like that, and I like the line that Snape says, like, Harry's like, aren't you going to yell at me? And Snape says something like, you have got enough going, you know, you don't need this too, me to yell.
Well, you know this
but
too,
he does. Sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Well, this too is like, if you think about the epilogue and you think about Snape and his impression of everything, Snape knew that going into this, he knew that, you know, difficulty and just rotten luck and people's, you know, some people having a harder time than others, that all works itself out in the end. And it may be seen as a large weakness, may turn into your greatest strength. I'm thinking about this because it's like you said, you can't picture, you know, most kids who have this problem knocking on their parents' door saying, I need help. And I think the reason is that these parents, you know, conceive and they have a child and they raise this child from, you know, a little baby. And over the years, they get, you know, desensitized to everything, and the kid in like relationships change, and you know how to relate to your little 2-year-old. You don't know how to relate to your big 6-year-old. You don't know how to relate to the kid when he goes to high school. And now everything's changing. And it's like Ron Weasley. Ron has always had his parents. He doesn't appreciate them because he's never known anything else. He's always had Molly. He's always had Arthur. He's always had the twins. And I think in this story, you have someone who, because it's an adoption at such a late age, everyone knows exactly what they're getting into in the beginning. And it means more. It means more to Harry and Draco. Like, how many 16-year-olds do you know who want to hang out with their dad? You know what I mean? It's like,
but that's also part of the storyline, his insecurities of being adopted. And
I think
that's part of the appeal.
I think it means more to them that they were adopted. It's more like a gift to them rather than every day. This is just how life is for, you know, Ron, who's always had the same parents, and it's just part of his life, and he doesn't appreciate it. So I think that let me rephrase this. I think if Snape were Harry's biological father, for the sake of argument, and he had always been Snape had always been his father, Harry would have had difficulty just going and knocking on that door, because I doubt their relationship could be the way it is now. Whereas they get to start as relatively mature adults. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, I think that, like, I couldn't picture, like, myself doing that, because my relationship with my parents has been colored by the way I was raised. I think that the fact that Draco, Snape, and Harry all had crappy lives before they found each other makes their relationship what it is. I don't think it would be nearly the same if they didn't have that background. I think that's what Snape's talking about in the epilogue.
Definitely, which leads us. Sorry,
we are trying so hard to go chronologically tonight.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying, which leads us to hello, Lucius throwing Draco into a pit of snakes is not good parenting.
That is bad parenting. Bad. bad. Very, very, very bad.
I have to
so at least he gave him the antidote or that purging potion or whatever it was.
Yes, I don't care. We can't give... No, he does not get points for throwing his son into the viper pit, but then gives him the antidote. Here's some analgesic cream. Doesn't work for me.
Shows how sick he is, that he doesn't want to kill his son, but he definitely wants to punish his son.
He couldn't, because Lucius actually gave the line away, because you're trying to figure out what's Lucius up to here. Why is he being so decent, relatively speaking, you know, after he gets him out of the viper pit to Draco? Why is he offering him his freedom? Why is
he... I think
he
loves his son in some sick, perverse way.
No, I didn't get that. He needed Draco. He needed Draco to be alive and well and kicking to be brought to Voldemort. He was like the guy, like, I think that Lucius had a lot in common with Professor Aaron in that his hands were tied. He needed certain things. You know, if you go after Professor Aaron and say, fine, tell my dad, fine, dock points from Slytherin, fine, do that. Aaron won't do it. He can't. He's constrained by the situation, and that's his Achilles heel. And Lucius needed Draco. He needed, for Lucius's own survival, Draco to do certain things. He needed to get information. He needed to set things up so that he could bring what he needed to Voldemort. And I think that was his motivation there. I don't think he could have cared less if Draco came back to the... I really think everything was about...
Lucius's own survival.
Yes, absolutely.
I completely agree. I don't think that Lucius cared one bit about Draco. I think that we have, you know, a pretty typical, like a child abuse situation where, you know, the parent had the kid because it was the thing to do and, you know, doesn't really know how to handle being a father. And, you know, there's a lot of really good emotional angst in Draco and Lucius is Narcissa's relationship that I think doesn't quite get explored enough in A Year Like None Other, which is ironic because later you'll hear me complain about how long this story is.
Can't be helped. We complain it's too long, and then we say, you know, thank God you put all these parts. Can you make it shorter but put more in? That'd be great. Thanks.
Well, I mean, the problem of it is that it's not organized the way that a traditional novel is organized. You don't have your, what do they call it? They call it the triangle or whatever, the exposition, the climax, and the resolution. You have about 12 chapters of exposition. Then you have one climax, and then you have 3,800 chapters of exposition, and then, you know, six chapters of climax, and then the kind of stories that, the roller coaster. The climax just as much as there's gotta be slow that builds up to it.
Well,
to make
with a story this long, you need that. The more parts that you put into it, it's like, think of a TV show. If you have a TV show, you can have one plot line for an entire, you know, 45-minute TV show. If you make it into a two-parter, you really need to have something else going on there, or else the audience is going to start to glaze over. If you have a three-parter, you need, you know, B plots and C plots. You need more going on than just, you know, this one plot, or people are going to glaze over. So I think the way Aspen had to write it was because there's so much exposition and there's so much repetition, which is real life. You know, people do the same things over and over again. You need to have other things happening there to kind of keep the reader engaged, or else it becomes kind of like reading a phone book almost, because it's like, okay, here's Snape and Harry on day one, here's Snape and Harry on day two, here's Snape and Harry on day three, and you're kind of
nobody
like,
cares.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I want to talk about Knot a little bit if we're ready to move on.
Scrambled egg boy.
I do. I want to talk a little bit because last week you were so sure
that he was good.
That Knot was good. That Knot was.
I believe what I said last week was I have an impression in my mind of Knot being an evil bastard, and I had difficulty seeing past that to
just
good
to
Knot. As it turns out, I was fine with everything that happened.
But you thought in this story he was going to be good, though.
Yes.
Is what you thought, right?
Yes, I did. Well, Draco Malfoy. No, I'm blaming this one on Aspen. She makes Draco Malfoy a good guy, and she makes Severus Snape a good guy. How the hell was I supposed to know she would come to her senses with Knot? I'm not responsible.
Had to be a bad guy.
So, I know, someone had to be a bad guy. He's like hugging Voldemort by the end of it. No, just kidding. But, like, yeah, I mean, you needed to have.
No,
See, I actually picked up that Knot was going to be bad.
Yeah, you were telling me this. When. You said you picked up the whole plot line way back when. Like,
when he got sick, and when they said he was the first one to get sick, and he was the one who was worst, you know, got sick the worst, immediately in my head, I thought, oh, this sickness has to be, you know, something to do with somehow, you know, the Harry Draco on the tower thing.
Oh, I didn't think that, because you know what? I thought that...
Really?
Well, you could see it either way. I thought that he was...
No, well, not with you, really. I was thinking... I didn't get that.
No, he was thinking... Like, my impression of it was that because Knot was friendly to Harry, he was, quote-unquote, targeted, and that's why he was the first to go.
Hmm.
I didn't see that.
I see why you think that.
I didn't see that coming out of it at all. Well, no, it's like...
I was definitely tiptoeing through the tulips this whole plot line. I was like, la di da.
And you had no idea.
And I was like, I had no idea right up until Knot pulled Harry down the alley, and I was like, that's kind of bizarre.
Well, no, here's the thing. Well, no, here's the thing. My Kira, did you either of you read Melinda Leo's The Seventh Horcrux?
After this,
yes. I read part of it.
Okay. Did you read the part at the end of it where Snape is torturing Harry?
No.
Okay. Well, when you get to the end, there's a special surprise for you. There's.
Wait. Yes, I do.
Yeah. Now I had Melinda as I was reading this. Melinda mentioned to me, this is before Deathly Hallows, that she saw Snape as a good guy. So I'm like, okay. So the entire novel sets Snape up as a bad guy, and he's a Death Eater, and he's working against Harry. So I'm like, haha, that's silly, man. He's a two-timing double agent, whatever. So then near the end of it, it gets to the point where he's literally holding Harry down in like a chokehold, giving him Draught of the Living Death, and it's like running down Harry's throat, and he's like forcing Harry to drink it. I'm thinking to myself, we're about to find the big reveal where Snape turns out to be a good guy. As it turns out, he wasn't. But I was, like, even as he's shoving the potion down his throat, I was still thinking to myself, you know, Snape is obviously still a very nice man. So, like sometimes if you have those preconceptions, I'm looking for, you know, the character that, you know, like Draco did at the end. I'm like, oh my god, is Draco a bad guy? And I didn't think he was, but... So, I mean, even, okay, Knot, you know, shoots Harry and melts his hand. I'm like, okay, Knot is working out some anger, but Knot continues to be, as I predicted...
He's working out some anger.
A good guy. Then he tries to bring Harry to Lucius. I'm like, okay, here's the deal. Like, Knot is one of those people... He came from one of those families where mom and dad fought all the time, and he's trying to bring people together to solve their problems. So he's trying to bring Harry and Lucius together.
You're such a Hufflepuff.
I'm such a Hufflepuff. And it's not until Harry turns him into a scrambled egg that I think to myself, you know what? Maybe Knot is just a very bad man.
Oh my goodness. I liked, I liked that whole scene that Harry, you know, it has to kick ass finally.
Yeah.
Because, I like my Harry to be competent. So, that was nice.
I thought that, well, you know what it was too? It's like the scene where, like earlier in the story, where Remus forces Harry to watch Marie of the attack on the Muggleborns. And, you know, Where's Remus? Where's Remus? I want Remus. He's out getting you ice cream. And you're like, oh no, you stupid man. Come back to the house. And it's the same thing. We're Ron and Hermione. They're making out in the alleyway. I'm like, damn it. They're going to be gone for half an hour.
I know. I've never been as happy to read that they were making out and stuff and as upset that they were not with Harry like they were supposed to be.
Now, here's my question. I have a question here, and I'm giving Wayne, who did a great job editing our last episode. Thank you, Wayne. I had this question, and I mentioned it, but I never actually thought it was, like, I never really saw a problem with it until he's like, great idea, Ryan. I'm like, thank you, Wayne. So here's the brilliant statement I made, which I didn't realize I made. All right, so Draco's possessions are repossessed, and I'm not going into the NBA route again, so don't worry. But Draco, from his underwear to everything he's bought, everything that Draco Malfoy bought has been repossessed by goblins or Lucius or whoever the hell repossesses them. Why wasn't Harry's shirt repossessed that he got for Christmas?
Wait.
Harry is wearing the shirt that's this. It's the Gryffindor shirt, but if you, like, press the button three times, it turns into a...
I think maybe it's because it was a gift and it was already magically... It was given to... It had to be things in his possession.
I actually think I mentioned this to Aspen the other day, and she wrote me an email earlier because she was listening to just our last episode.
Oh, so she listened to my brilliant comment. I didn't realize that, mate.
Oh,
that's
no.
Nice. That's good. That's good.
Yeah, well, she was kind of confused. She didn't understand why no one had caught on, but she said that basically all of his possessions had been, you know, taken away. And so, you know, the other things that he had purchased for other people were not taken away because they were not his. Hmm. And I'm not exactly sure why, but that was a roundabout explanation.
Well, that makes sense.
Well, no, not really. That's like saying if I, you know, go to, you know, my local Toyota dealer and write a check for a new Toyota and give the car to Jen. And the check bounces, they can't take the Toyota back because that's not mine anymore. Like, it's, you know, it's like, I don't know.
It sounds like to me that, like when I get asked a question and I have to think really hard, like, because I have unknowingly created a plot hole, that sounds like an answer that I would give.
But you know what, though? I am going to say this, though. While that's usually true, Lady Chi, I don't doubt the fact that we're a bunch of dimwits trying to understand it right now and that there actually could be a reasonable explanation that's beyond our grasp. I'm not discounting that in this instance.
Well, see, I think Jen's right. I would say it's more like when you go into debt, say, and they go to repossess your stuff. Uh-huh. They'll repossess everything you have, but they're not going to go and take things, you know, that you gave to other family members and hunt down, you know, all your neighbors that you've given Christmas gifts to.
So listen, boys and girls, take out the credit card, all right? Go to the mall, buy everything you can get your hands on, and give it to your second cousin. They'll never get it. Okay, that joke kind of died there. I
was trying to understand. Like, it took me a minute to understand. I was like, what?
Jen, buy me a car. Just buy me a car. Oh, God. Okay, we need to move on from this point. Now, okay, so Knot is now officially a bad guy, much to my chagrin here.
I love the excitement of that scene. Well, I mean, it is like, bam, then bam, then bam. You're just like, oh, my God, oh, my God.
Well, you were waiting 85 chapters for him to try and take another hit on him. So it's kind of like, oh, my God.
I know. I'm like, where's the hairy angst?
Well, you know what it is? Like, there's scenes that you see in every fic. Like, Melinda had one in Power of Emotion, where, you know, Harry, you know, Voldemort is, you know, sweeping Europe with raids and attacks by Death Eaters, and Dumbledore gives Harry and his friends permission to go shopping for Christmas in a Muggle mall. And I remember screaming to myself, "Don't do it, you stupid old man! This does never work. This does not work in fan fiction. Something will happen." And of course, they attack the mall, and there's like fights in the arcade. I feel bad for people who haven't read these fics. I'm really giving away the ending to them. But, you know, so
you're
like,
no,
yeah, so it's basically, okay, Harry's been indoors for 66 chapters and, you know, Voldemort hasn't gotten him yet. And then he gets permission to go out with his friends for the day. I'm like, oh, damn, not good. So.
Yep, pretty much.
Jen, did you? I know you said before when, Draco was making, what was it, the cakes, that you thought you were convinced Draco went evil? Or whatever it was before you said, oh no, when he threw Pansy up the tower, you said you thought he really went evil? Were you thinking the same thing at the Lucius scene when he's putting the thing to Harry's eye and everything? That makes sense.
What?
Mike, ask it again. It was actually, you said it well, Jim just fell over.
I'm up, so.
Oh, Jen, just a question, Jen. What time are you going to pass out tonight, just so we can plan?
About 10.
Okay. All right, Mike, continue.
I was saying, I remember before in the Pansy chapters, you had been saying that you became convinced as you were reading it that Draco was really evil, and you gave up hope on him again. And I was wondering if you did the same thing when he's going to put out Harry's eye with Lucius in this reading.
Yeah, do you think at the end that he had turned back to Lucius and that he was actually a bad guy?
Did you ever doubt Draco for a second in that scene?
Jen, are you there?
I don't think Jen.
She is. Did we actually lose Jen? That'd be funny if we did. Jen,
oh. No, I said it, and it reminded me to take my pills, and so I went and got my pills.
Jen, we've been asking you a question.
Oh, I thought so. We were waiting on me.
We thought you were the biggest dimwit for not getting the easiest.
Jen,
it.
Jen, do you like grass? 10 minutes of silence as she paused.
Actually, it's my favorite.
I just thought I wasn't making any sense with my... I thought, like, you know, I have a fever, or I'm talking gibberish here.
No, I'm sorry, Ryan. He reminded me to take my pills, and so I got up and I went to go get them, and I just thought, well, I go, well, no one's jumping in. What's going on?
Okay, I just tell you this, by the way, too. During this month's giving episode last week, I actually called Danielle in the middle of it, so she beeped in off the line. Like, Danielle, I can't help but notice that your green line isn't moving. Can you please talk on the podcast? That'd be great. Thanks. You can go back now.
Don't be mean to her. She was kind of intimidated.
No idea why. All right, Mike, ask your question to Jen again. Jen, listen carefully and then answer when ready.
Okay. My question was, I remember way back when we were talking about the pansy being thrown off the tower, you said you became convinced when you were reading that Draco was evil and you gave up all hope on him. And I was wondering whether you had the same reaction when he's going to put out Harry's eye in this reading. And he looks like he's siding with Lucius. You go, oh my God, Draco's really evil after all?
No, I'm here. I'm here. Okay. I was like answering. Okay, let me start again. Let me start again. I don't know why I was on. Oh my God. I was totally answering. Like, I have a good answer. Okay. Ryan Hutch, I have to answer. Okay.
I'm going on mute. Please answer.
Wait.
Do you need me to ask it again?
No. Okay. When I have to say that when I'm reading a Draco fic, I try to be smarter than the author. I keep trying to see like plots and like try to figure things out and like, I don't know if that makes sense, but like I try to keep on the back burner what I originally know of characters and what I know. And like, so I have to say that even at this point, even though I totally believe that Draco is good and they're brothers and blah, 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 the back of my mind like keeps myself like, Draco still could be bad. Draco still, this could be real. And so I tell myself that. So then when it turns out that Draco is really evil, I'm like, oh yeah, I knew that all along. Like I make myself feel better. And I know that's really stupid.
You're like
but,
Don Imus. All right.
I know. Anyway, and so when I really thought that Draco was, originally when he was like on with Pansy, I thought he was evil. I thought this is where Aspen's going to twist it and we're going to really find out that all this time Draco has been one of them and like he's been like secret and like part of me is like screaming no but their relationship no and part of him's like oh it'd be so evil so then I have to like, argue with myself but at this point no I didn't I thought I remember I had two feelings I'd read it and first I was like oh my gosh what a great ruse this is such a ruse and then I like congratulated myself for knowing the word ruse and then I had a thought where I went, oh my God, this is the turning point. Draco really is evil. This whole thing has been a farce. And then I congratulated myself for knowing the word farce.
Yep. All right.
Yes. And then, this is like my thought process. And then I thought, oh my gosh. Oh, wait. Oh, good. Oh, good. He's good. Okay. And then like I just kept going. But no, really, I thought Aspen had thrown one over on me and I was so unprepared.
All right, round table.
But I was very relieved.
Let's see what everyone else thinks. Mike, answer your own question about the first time you read it, and do you need us to repeat the question again, or are you all set?
I'm set.
All right.
I didn't think Draco was evil so much. I thought he was really going to do it, but I thought it was more of a, oh my God, he's scared for his life, and he's kind of a coward like he is in canon. So I didn't think of him as him being evil so much as him like being scared and losing his backbone kind of thing.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
That makes sense. Lady Chi?
You really don't want to peek inside my head.
Lady Chi, let us in. Let us in, Lady Chi.
Well, I wasn't really necessarily concerned with all that much whether Draco was, you know, good or evil so much as I was going, Hmm, interesting plot device there, you know. Interesting word choice.
You don't read like a normal human being.
Right, don't ask me those questions.
Lady Chi, were there any words that Aspen used that sent you for a tailspin of some sort, or are you good?
No, I was on my medication. I was fine.
Kira, what about you?
You know, I thought that Draco, well, I wanted to believe he was really good, but I was really afraid that he was turning. I didn't think that he had been evil all along, but I was afraid he was turning under the pressure and that he would become evil or bad. So I was really, really relieved when he wasn't.
Well, here's my deal. If that turned out to be a ruse and Draco was faking the whole time, I would have literally gone to Aspen, demanded both my money and my life back, because I've been reading this story since August. Like, come on. But, here was the thing. There were references leading up to that. Like, the whole thing about Draco keeping Snape in his name, I'm sorry, Draco keeping Malfoy in his name was, there were that clue that was left at the kitchen table in Snape's quarters, that there was something else going on there that Harry didn't get. And there were several references to things that were happening that Harry didn't understand, which screamed plot device. So you file that away, that there's something else going on there. When you got to that scene in France, I didn't think that Draco would have been bad all along. It made me wonder if there was... I knew there was something else going on. The two options were either Draco had something happening with his father, or Draco had something happening with Snape. It turned out to be Snape. I think Snape was the very safe choice there. Would it have been more daring for Aspen to have, you know, had Draco not have jumped completely over and left himself a lifeboat back to Lucius if that was ever necessary? That would have been a much more provocative choice. I think it may have weakened the character somewhat. So I'm happy.
No. I think it's so important that it made us doubt here.
I
think it's so. I think it's important for us to the reader to think back, take a step back, and it's a constant reminder of, oh yeah, we should remember Draco's past. Draco's not necessarily good. And I liked that she allowed Harry to have serious doubts about him, even at this point in their relationship.
Oh, he was literally like about to scoop Harry's eye out with a spoon. I mean,
oh, that was just,
yeah. How would you even do that? Picturing Harry with his eye closed.
He said that he wasn't going to.
No, can I just tell you, I'm going to bring this back to Star Trek again, because we don't talk about Star Trek nearly enough on this podcast.
Of course not.
There was an episode of that wonderful TV series Star Trek Voyager. God, how much I love Voyager. If only there were 1,000 more shows.
Is that the one with the woman captain?
Yes. It was written by a monkey and a trained chimpanzee, with all due respect.
I was being serious.
No, it was. No, it absolutely was, but it was very poorly written.
Captain Jane.
Wait.
Yes. Look at me. I'm so good.
You guessed there was a woman on the show, Jen. Congratulations.
No, the Jane. Woman captain.
Yes.
That was the one from the captain 90s Jane. That my father gave up on.
Yes, it was a...
That was the show he watched before Deep Space Nine and gave up on that one.
No, Deep Space Nine is a wonderful Star Trek series. Badmouth Deep Space Nine, see me after the podcast. Voyager sucked. But anyway, there was an episode of course, I watch every episode of Voyager just to make sure it still sucked. And it did, up until the end. And then, in the last episode, literally, the last episode of Voyager was actually a turd. I didn't think they could actually do that at the end, because usually they try and, you know, they try and sober up for the ending. It was actually a turd. Like, it was, okay, picture, like, every, chapter of A Year Like None Other being... like an episode of a TV series, and picture there were people who read it who say didn't like it or had difficulty with it. Picture in the last chapter if Aspen randomly had, you know, Draco wearing a ballerina outfit for no reason. Like, that's the kind of shit that happened in the last episode of Voyager. But it'd be like randomly in the last chapter, you know, like Hermione's like has her tongue down Neville's throat for no reason, and the writer's response is, oh, I thought they were together, I forgot. Like, it's very poorly written. But there was an episode of the show where the crew, there was like this mind control thing or whatever, and the crew all kind of turned against each other, and there was this forced mutiny on the ship because of some like alien influence here, because really, why would these characters, you know, why not just have it be a natural thing between people who didn't like each other? That would have been way too interesting. So they went for the stupid route and had aliens do it, but whatever. So there's a point where you know, the captain has been, you know, arrested and she's in the brig of the ship and you know, people are taking over the ship and they want to test one guy and see if he is really on the bad guy's side. The bad guys think he might be like a mole, like kind of like the Snape on the side of the light. So they bring the captain in and they're concerned this guy is still on the captain's side. So they're like, okay, you want to prove you're not on the captain's side? Fine. So they give her like the phaser, like the little laser weapon. They say, fine, kill the captain. If you kill the captain, we'll believe you. He's like, all right. So he points the gun at the captain, the phaser at the captain, and he shoots it. He's like, it's set to kill, shoots it. And like the phaser goes, And the bad guys are like, okay, congratulations. We obviously didn't give you a loaded phaser, but you know, you passed the test. We trust you. And of course, he really was working for the captain and they take the ship back. And later on, she's like, I can't help but notice you pointed the phaser at my head and tried to kill me. He's like, oh, I knew it wasn't loaded. She's like, how did you know? He's like, I figured they wouldn't give me a, you know, like a loaded phaser. I could have shot them. So you didn't know. I was very sure. You almost shot me in the head. It wouldn't have hurt you. Why? It wasn't loaded. How did you know? I was fairly sure. It just reminded me of the same thing. How did you know, Draco, he was going to stop you? I figured he wouldn't make me scoop your eye out. Were you sure about that, Draco? I figured it would have been fine. Like, it just reminded me of the same type of mentality. Like, the shut up, Harry. Everything worked out in the end. You almost scooped my eye out. No, I didn't. Like, it's just like the circular logic of the situation I just thought was really cool.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God you're still here. There was silence, and I thought I just told that whole story to a dead room. Okay. You're all enraptured by my story. I would have had to tell the whole thing over and over again. But where the hell were we? Aspen, you're like none other. Aspen in the Sunlight. Does anyone remember?
Which is definitely not Star Trek Voyager. Thank God.
Thank God. Aspen, seriously, if you ever want to write a Star Trek series, I'd watch. I would.
Well, Ryan, I don't think that there's been a Star Trek series you haven't watched.
I actually gave up on Enterprise.
Really? I watched Enterprise for about 2.5 seasons and gave up.
Well, know what happened? I watched the first 2 years of it and gave up, and then apparently it got good, so I went back and I'm now watching the ones I gave up on. But Voyager, don't bother. If you're listening here and you're about to buy it, it's overpriced, don't even give it. It's a terrible show. But
I like Pirates of the Caribbean.
I do, too. That's an awesome show.
Wow, okay, as we strive for even more optimisticness than we've ever had before.
Chi, she's like, can we go chronologically? Sure, Chi, and then we're talking about Pirates of the Caribbean 10 minutes later.
Okay, no, seriously, let's go back to your, like, number. What should we talk about next? Let's see, what other...
Go ahead. Am I the only one who thought Aron, however you say his name,
was a Death Eater?
Well, no, I mean, I love these chapters. They're my favorite part of the whole story. And I love the story, but his character, especially in the end, like the last couple of chapters, seems really kind of like one of those characters where the author's trying so hard to make you hate him. And like the whole thing with the duel at the end, my reaction was kind of like, this is almost pathetic. It's like, it seemed like just like, I don't know, like you have it in there just so all the readers can go, yeah, I hate him, beat him up, kind of, well, with no real greater plot point.
The thing with his character was his, like,
he's
like,
too pathetic for me to hate.
Well, no, he was
actually be competent.
He was he was like a lower key version of Umbridge, because and people in the fandom have always said this: who's a greater villain, Dolores Umbridge or Lord Voldemort? It's always going to be the Dolores Umbridge, because it's always going to be the people who you can, you know, mwahaha, I am evil, hear me roar, isn't scary.
Is it real life?
But
yeah.
But your next door neighbor, who is, you know, like a racist and a bigot, who also is the head of the school committee, is scary, because they can actually do stuff, and they're actually, you can understand that there are real people like this, and this is something in your real life that you have to be on the lookout for. So his character, you know, you could understand that he was a bigot in this case, for lack of a better term, and you didn't know, like, I thought at times he was a Death Eater who called Lucius Malfoy in, and, you know, it turns out he wasn't, and I thought, for some reason, I thought that she was going to go the Quirrell route with him and have him be, you know, you think he's this weak little guy, and then he mops the floor with Snape, and, like, I wasn't sure where it was going, so I did have, like, a little anxiety level there, but I think the character, like, I really enjoyed the character because he wasn't toothless. When he couldn't get his way with McGonagall and the staff, he went to Lucius Malfoy, and look what that caused. When he couldn't get his way after that, he went to Rita Skeeter. So he was capable of great damage, but because Harry was at the point in his life that he was at with the people behind him that he had, Aaron wasn't able to harm him, but he easily could have earlier in the year or earlier in his Hogwarts years. He could have greatly damaged Harry, but at this point he was pathetic because he was like a little bit behind the curve with Harry. Harry was too good for him. So, and you know what? If JKR had put in 3 or 4 chapters of Umbridge being absolutely humiliated, I would have read them. You know what I mean? It's like, how much is too much? The fact that, you know, Snape literally, like, took his face and rubbed it in the mud and, like, put him through every single thing he put Harry through and turned him into a snake and made Harry talk to the snake. I mean, literally, like, you know what? If I'm going to read 96 chapters, I don't mind if that's one of them.
So much stuff to happen that happens in these chapters that my brain is like on overload and yeah. I can't.
There's no way.
Just like the one thing that
Aspen's listening right now going, I knew it! I told you to break it up.
I know. I was like, this is why I split it up.
I remember the topic.
What do you got?
Draco's adjusting to going back to Slytherin and he's Malshite and all that.
That was great.
I love the Malshite. I know it's horrible.
It's
so creative, and I just dislike it.
Can I just tell you, I was listening to that on my iPod, and I have the program that converts it phonetically. I had no freaking clue what they were saying.
What did it say phonetically?
It was like, Melshit, Melshit. I'm like, what? What is he calling it? Melshit? Melshit? Like, I had no literal idea what the hell he was talking about. I just knew it was derogatory. Then I go home, I'm like, oh, that was lame. All right. But Jen, go.
Keep going. Sorry. I want to talk about everybody's thoughts immediately following Lucius discovering he was a stone. Like, after they realized...
Lucius discovering that Lucius was a stone?
I mean, that Snape and Dumbledore and Remus... Didn't Remus? Yeah, Remus. Yep. Came in, and they discover that he's not just a stone, he's dead. And Harry's like, I gotta go look for a bathroom. And I always thought, why didn't Snape go out? I mean, didn't he think maybe possibly something was not right, that immediately finding out the news that he's killed his first person, he goes off in search of a bathroom? Like,
he killed his brother's father, and Snape didn't find it odd that Harry just went to pee in a library? That should have raised red flags, I'm sure.
I know, but it did. Was it just that Snape accepted at this point that Harry had problems, or was Snape really oblivious?
I think Snape must have been oblivious, because how can
you think?
Well, like, for all of the father-son chats they have in this story, I mean, that needs to be, you know,
but he's so, like...
They do have a chat, though. I mean, Snape's misunderstanding what's wrong. I think the thing is, Snape knows something's wrong, and he tries to talk to Harry about it a couple of times. But again, I think he's more focused on Draco at the start because,
yeah,
on the surface, Draco went through more. His biological father was killed. He was bit by 100 snakes, you know. So I think Snape's first concern is Draco right away. But doesn't he have that conversation with Harry at some point where he's like, you know, I want to talk to you about Lucius. You shouldn't feel guilty for it. Like, he has...
It's not like a glossed over. It's like a glossed over conversation. Like, this is something that I feel might show up again later on. Or I think that it's something that I was hoping it would.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly, I mean, everything the way it happens is very reasonable. You have, you know, you have two sons, and you know, they have separate fathers, and one son kills the other son's father. So who do you immediately reach out to first, the killer son or the son whose father was just killed? You try and protect the person whose emotions are likely more out of, and it's in, but when you think about it, Harry is much more upset by this than Draco is. I mean, you know what? It's a perfect storm, and Snape isn't perfect. And when you look back at all the conversations Snape's had, he said that Harry has dark magic. He explained it doesn't mean that you're a dark wizard, it means you have dark magic. And he gave the speech about you can't become a dark wizard, you need to, you know, take steps to stand on the side of light. You need to look at your actions, you need to, you know, You need to look at yourself and you need to feel remorse. It's like what he did with Draco and the fairy cakes. Fairy cakes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fairy cakes.
That just seemed like a weird term to use right there. I wasn't sure if they were fairy cakes. It's like what he does with Draco and the fairy cakes. You know, you need to accept the consequences of your actions. You can't be like Voldemort. So anyone knowing all of Harry's psychoses should have seen this coming.
Mm-hmm.
And if Harry were a real person, Harry would be on 53 different types of medications right now.
At the very least.
It's a very likely reaction. Therapy. Yeah, I mean, Snape should have, people should have caught that. It shouldn't have come to Harry banging on Snape's door. Someone should have caught it, but is it realistic that no one did? Absolutely.
Well, yeah. It's not like he had started to wear long sleeves to, you know, hide cut marks. He wasn't even really cutting. He was, you know, stabbing, and they make, you know, such tiny little pinpricks. And they
they're in cloaks anyway all the time.
Yeah, that too.
You would see it.
After all he's been through in the last couple of weeks, I mean, Draco too, but, you know, it's not too surprising that he might want some time alone because he's probably feeling a little depressed, and so... You know, I'm sure the last thing that's on their mind is that he's, you know, stabbing himself.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? It was one of those things where I was so glad that, and I said this before tonight, I'll just say it again. I was so glad that it happened in the 90s, because if that were chapter 70 and we got into that, I really felt like it could have, I'm trying to think of a way to say this because I don't want it to make it seem like
you had to get to a point where if you show that kind of thing too early,
I was afraid it would have monopolized most of the story. And I just want to be clear here because, you know, this is something that many people listening to this podcast, you know, many people on this podcast who know people, this is something that people really deal with. And this is just as important as discussing, you know, adoption or, you know, loss of parents or loss of loved ones or, you know, the many serious issues that we discuss on this podcast every week. I mean, there is no reason that I should read this and feel uncomfortable reading it. I think on some level, I'm in the hasn't Harry suffered enough crowd. Is it something where I want to sit down and read a story about someone who self-inflicts? I mean, probably not. If someone recommended a great story to me about Harry, you know, suffering with cancer, I probably wouldn't read that one either, because that's not what I look for in my fan fiction. I mean, I think I'm the opposite of Jen when it comes to what I look for in my fan fiction. But, you know, I look for the more hopeful ones. But, you know, I do, on the other hand, read lots of fics where Harry is depressed because he needs to be depressed after everything he's gone through. So, I mean, I don't know. I think... In retrospect, having read it, I think Aspen handled the whole thing beautifully, but I was uncomfortable reading it, and I wasn't uncomfortable
as
reading...
As you should be.
Yeah, I wasn't uncomfortable reading Samhain. I mean, I don't know. I was very uncomfortable reading that. But I do just want to say one thing here, and Chi, I'd like to know what you think on this, and you two, Kira, and everybody. Okay, we have Samhain, and we have Harry stripped naked. He has needles poked through his eyes, through every orifice of his body. He is absolutely degraded, humiliated, and he is treated inhumanely. And he gets past that. It takes a while, but he doesn't. His psychological injuries heal rather quickly. And at the climax of this story, you have Harry. And at the end of the story, you have Harry who, you know, he is forced to take his shirt off by Lucius Malfoy, and he is threatened with having his eyes scooped out.
Which, when that happened, I thought this story was, that scared me more than the cutting. When the shirt came off, like, I thought, I knew for sure that this was going to turn into a sexual abuse thing. Like, he was screwed up.
But you know what it is? It seems like everything that happened at Samhain on every level was 50 times worse than what happened in France at the end. And the only difference, obviously, let's look at differences, was that he did not know that he would survive it, whereas he knew he would survive Samhain and he would be blind. So that's a huge difference. I don't want to negate
well, that
difference.
And Voldemort wasn't there, you know, for Lucius to try and impress.
Yes. I mean, let me ask you this. Does it seem as this is the question of the hour. Does it seem as though Harry's reaction to Samhain and Harry's reaction to, we'll call it France at the end, does it seem like those reactions were reversed from the event? In other words, does it seem like the way Harry responded to France should have been the way he responded to Samhain and vice versa?
I don't, maybe you guys might disagree with me, but to me, it wasn't like, I think that if, say what happened with Lucius, if Lucius survived that, I think Harry would have been fine emotionally. I don't think it was the taking his shirt off and the spoon to his eye that got to Harry. I think it was his reactions to when he killed someone and his own internal fears. And I don't think the difference is that in one, he knew he was going to be okay, and the other, he didn't. I think that in one, it's more an external, like people are piling things onto him, and it's not his fault. And what gets Harry is when it's his something he did something wrong. He didn't do anything wrong in Samhain, but in the Lucius in France, he feels he did something wrong.
Yeah.
I definitely agree. I also think that it's also a bit of when something happens, you kind of pick yourself up and you go, okay, yeah, that was terrible, and I'm going to try to move on. But with Harry, it was like that, and then it was like the Revan mask and the realization that he's going to kill Lucius, and then something else, and then and this was just like another something else that piled up on him. And like, I think at this point, he goes into the room and it's like a maniac laugh. He laughs because the whole thing is so ridiculous. He cannot get his head around it. The only thing he can focus on is the fact that he doesn't feel bad about killing Lucius. And frankly, after all of this, that it's so ridiculous to the reader that be the thing that he's concerned about, because at this point, my mouth is just open at all the things that he's had to endure. And it's hard. I can't imagine being Snape in this position. What do you say? I mean, when things happen, you go, okay, yeah, shitty things happen, and you get up and you move on and you go on. What do you say to someone when something bad happens and then something else and then something else? And finally, they're so, they can't deal with it at such an extent.
Well, look at Harry's fears here. Harry's fear, like, look at the built-in safeguards in the Wizarding World. I was thinking about this, as Jen would say, in detail today. And, okay, you're given a wand. Okay, your 11-year-old, here is your little wand. You know, go to Hogwarts. Okay. Now, you can use this wand to make feathers, you know, flop up in the air. And you can use this wand to open doors. It's like a Swiss Army knife. And you can use this wand to kill people. And you can use this wand to burn your house down. But you can't kill people unless you really, really mean it. And you can't take over people's minds unless you really, really mean it. So even though saying a few words with your wand in your hand can give you a life sentence in prison, there are these safeguards that you have to be a type of person. Like, Harry can't.
You have to be an evil person.
Yes, but now, but look at Harry's situation here, because of the bone marrow transplant, and because, now this is just because we've been reading this fic for so damn long. Now, Harry's dark magic, his core was broken open. Was it simply the bone marrow transplant, or was it also Samhain?
I think it was bone marrow transplant and, like, the Muggle treatments after that.
So it had nothing to do with Samhain?
No, well,
because he already had, he just didn't know how to access
it before, but it was already damaged before that.
Okay, so it was the bone marrow transplant. Okay, so you have Harry, because of a procedure he went through, because of this weird interaction between Muggle, you know, instruments and his magical. No, but what I'm saying is Harry is in a position now where he can point a wand at Albus Dumbledore and say, "Turn to stone," and there was nothing. Like, Dumbledore is gone. He is now a statue. Harry has so much power that, you know, traditional, there's no safeguard. If you screw up, you're going to turn, you know, the guy's legs into scrambled eggs, or you're going to turn that man into a monument. I mean, that, and that's what Malfoy the portrait plays into. How long do you think Dumbledore will tolerate keeping you around? Will it be Snape's to be the one to put you down eventually someday? Which is like a Star Wars reference almost. I mean, like, at what point is Harry going to be so powerful he can't control it? Because Harry is one of a kind at this point. I mean,
well, he's a walking
time
bomb in a way.
What if
and maybe
Snape. What if we piss Harry off? Will he kill us all? He could.
Well, I think when Snape and when Remus and them came in, and everybody just had this look of shock, especially when they realized that it was just a simple, what was the spell?
It was, Petrificus Totalus.
Petrificus Totalus, yeah. When they realize the extent, I don't think anybody has even, you would think that, is Harry the first person in history who has complete and utter access to his dark magic, or is he just the second to Voldemort having that, or does Voldemort, have that?
Voldemort, at the end of the story, Voldemort is going through a bone marrow transplant because Voldemort is trying to duplicate the condition. So Voldemort is saving some poor muggle with leukemia, apparently, because Voldemort is giving bone marrow. But can you imagine being the nurse, like, looking over? You look pretty. Like, what the fuck is up with you? So obviously, like, I would just like to be the person working for that HMO. That's all I can say. But
oh.
Well, they actually don't have HMOs. Why am I okay? This is like when I went into where'd the money go. All right, we have to get me off this track. This is dangerous. But Harry, as far as we know, is the only one in existence right now who has access to these powers that the Dark Lord.
Well, I think that Snape and them acknowledge that if not handled well, and this is what concerns me. Like, I understand that it's equal. Like, I think this is where I went, that I had the first fault with Snape as a parent, and I kind of realized maybe he's not totally perfect. Because in my opinion, I think when reading this, there was so much of Snape's immediate concern towards Draco, which I admit is definitely justified with the poison and the almost dying thing. But he seems, I guess it's because he seems so, what is the word where you think of something before it happens? So prepared.
Yeah.
Towards Harry, and Harry's adjusting and what's going on with Harry. And like, he's the one that kind of gets Harry to acknowledge what's going on with himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like at this point, I felt like Severus missed it. Like he did it just completely. He could not guess what Harry was going through, and felt a little let down, which I know is ridiculous, because what parent would get that? What person could get that?
I mean, we're reading the thing, and I miss things too. It's like, okay, when Harry, like, I was reading this, and when Harry is talking to Snape, and Harry mentions the fact that Draco made him disrobe. Jen, that's the other figure reading this week. I'm like, ooh, I forgot about the sexual abuse angle, and is that playing into it? Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but I even forgot that. So, I'm sorry, G, go ahead. I reading this even didn't make some of the connections, and I'm pretty smart.
Well, but thing, I think she's setting up points to address later on. That's the point that I'm trying to make. This is such it's a conclusion, but for me, it felt like it hadn't, because it didn't clear up the things with the ending, didn't clear up the SI. It didn't clear up Harry's emotional trauma from this latest thing. And like, it sort of did. I mean, it kind of brushed over like the end of Goblet of Fire with Dumbledore patting him on the head as he explained Priory and contained him badly. But do you know what I mean? Like, I felt, because everything else in the story was so drawn out and so specifically detailed, that this is major, and she's glossing. Why is she glossing? I don't know if anybody else got that.
I didn't think it was glossing, but I think in all great, the best stories are the ones that don't begin and don't end. Like there's, like, for example, like for Babylon 5, which I'll plug again, because Mike is watching it. The writer of this series planned a 5-year story. He knows everything that will happen in that universe in those 5 years. He also planned the next 100 years ahead, the 100 years before, and 1,000,000 years in each direction. So on the day that the screen goes to black on the last episode, that world will still exist tomorrow, and those people will still get up and do things. So the fact that the year is over does not mean that Harry has suddenly come to grips with the fact that, you know, he has all of these psychological issues, and it doesn't mean that Snape has come to grips with his parenting skills, and it doesn't mean, I mean, that will all still be there tomorrow.
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess that's a good point. I didn't know why. I guess because I'm one of those people that sort of focuses on the angst, which I know everybody's going, yeah, roll your eyes, we know. But I know that, like, when they started going into, like, the Aaron storyline and, like, or the Ron, I don't know. Anyway, and, like, the snake punching was a great scene, but the whole time I was like,
What about the stabbing? What about the angst? What about the fact that Harry is so... He's a wreck. You can't just fix things by Snape. Although I have to admit, the Snape, the watery metaphor and the cuddling. Yes, they hugged again. And the post Snape finding out about Harry's SI was nice. I liked that scene.
I think it played much better than it did. Like, I think it was originally in chapter 12, the first time when they did Occlumency. I complained then, what's up with the freaking word cleaver spooning? And now it's completely, you know, it's completely justified because now you've shown me over 90 chapters why I should believe in these characters. But in the beginning, I'm like, what the hell is going on? But
they're hugging.
They're hugging with their minds.
That was a
nice.
Good
I really liked the metaphor. Shut up! I'm trying to.
I like
think. I like the Shut up, Brian.
Yes.
I really like the occlumency metaphors in this story. Harry is fire and Snape is water, and you know, I mean. There's a lot of really good imagery in this story, especially in the abstract world. Not so much so in the physical world. She doesn't spend a lot of time doing that. But, you know, I think some of my favorites from these chapters were the writhing death marks in the jar, the occlumency, fire and water scene. What else was really good imagery? The snake turning Aaron into a snake.
That was funny. I'm sorry.
I mean,
that was too good.
The Harry's description of the canine spell.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Snape's is like a big bad wolf, and Aaron's got a little Pomeranian.
I was picturing when like in my head I was picturing Horace Slughorn the entire time with Professor Aaron, and I'm not sure if that was I was picturing this like very. You know, robust, circular man, and like I was picturing the whole thing, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, the whole thing with Professor Aaron and Snape at the end, I mean, was it so, it was overplayed, but it was good. It was, you know, chapter after chapter after chapter after chapter of just humiliating Aaron over and over and over and over and over and over. But, I think in the end, you had to have some type of release like that. You needed that. I'm sorry. You cannot have Harry, you know, cutting himself and poking himself with Hermione's, like, you know, yarn needles and not have some type of release in these chapters. I thought, you know, Dumbledore amused me so greatly in the latter half of this. Like, every chapter we read tonight, I was a huge fan of the way she wrote Dumbledore, which if you remember a couple episodes ago, I wasn't. I thought Dumbledore really captured, you know, like, just the jovialness of canon Dumbledore. I love, like, just, like, for, like, when Snape challenges Professor Aaron to the duel, and Dumbledore is like, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, we're gonna have a duel to the death tomorrow. Enjoy your breakfast, everybody. And just sits down. And, like, I love the part where, Professor Aaron comes out of the woods as he tried to escape the school, and Hagrid carries him out. And he's like, it appears as though you've been fighting a large elm tree. Like, it's just, his, like, I cracked up, or even in the last, no, it's the epilogue when he's trying to play matchmaker for Snape. I just thought he was so funny. He was like half brilliant wizard, half 83-year-old woman who's speaking with her hands. I just thought it was so. He was such a fun character, Dumbledore, and he was so serious at the same time. But I think you needed the Aaron moments, and you needed the Dumbledore moments, and you needed some type of comic relief. And you needed, I was aiming to say release there, and that's why I paused for a moment to
check my word. Release is a good word.
Comic release is what I was going for. I'm like, why is nobody saying anything? That was brilliant.
I think even Summer, like Aspen, realized even that these boys need a break from life, from this. And Summer is very much slow and almost to a jovial. I mean, there's the dark undertones. There, but it's light. I mean, she's letting them all have a break. She acknowledges that this is a lot to take on. This is a
a lot has happened.
But can we please, before this night is over, can we please stop and talk about the major plot point of these 15 chapters? Because I believe we've missed it,
sure.
And that's unfortunate. Goyle is dyslexic.
That's the major plot point.
Now, I was talking to Jen. When I read it the first time, I actually thought it said Goyle was anorexic.
And I was like, what?
And I'm like, I don't remember Goyle not eating that much. He went back for a second helping. I'm like, what? And yes, Goyle is dyslexic. And all I can picture is, wasn't that the line that Tom Felton in Chamber of Secrets ad-libbed? I didn't know you could read.
Mm-hmm. I thought, yeah, that is such a good connection there, Ryan.
Well, let me just say, I loved it. I thought it was great. And it at some point,
I like that he's worried about Doyle getting too.
Yeah, it's
like the Goyle's a person in this. Like, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. It seems like sometimes when people get into fan fiction, they want to fix the canon because there's parts they don't like. And Aspen didn't do that, but this is an example of what you'll sometimes find. Like, okay, Harry is now someone who, you know, is a cutter, and Harry is someone who, you know, is deeply depressed, and he's in St. Mungo's for weeks on end, and he's in the fetal position sucking his thumb. And as it turns out, you know, Goyle was dyslexic all this time, who knew? And as it turns out, you know, Dumbledore has, you know, a mood disorder of some kind, and that's why he's throwing Harry into trophy cases. And as it turns out, like, there's this...
Well, I feel like she makes the Slytherins people.
Yeah, I mean,
they are just kids, just like the others.
But that's
can I just add something here?
Yeah, and I just want, just before you do, I just want to say, I'm not saying that this is what Aspen did, and you're like, what the hell's the name of the damn thing? You're like, none of them.
You're like,
by Aspen in the Sunlight. But she's not doing that, but there's sometimes you see people come in and try and mugglefy the wizarding world. But in the context of this story, I think the fact that Goyle's not only a real person, but he's been dyslexic all this time, and if he only can, you know, get the right medication, he'd be fine. I just think that's great. Sorry, go, Mike.
Actually, I'm off topic, so never mind.
Oh, I'm talking. Come on, Mike.
Okay, Mike. I was just going to comment. Your comment made me. I just watched all the Harry Potter movies.
Uh-huh.
And I was just wondering, am I the only one who thought the new Dumbledore was like really creepy? Because I was thinking the Goblet of Fire scene where he like slams Harry
into the trophy wall. Case.
Yeah,
that's like a running joke of ours. Yeah.
Yes, is it? That was the moment that will live in infamy in terms of
I Harry know.
No,
and then
I cringe.
And then I realized that's actually Dumbledore.
It's like I'm a political science geek, and I was sitting in my room folding laundry about 3 years ago watching TV when Howard Dean on live TV did the scream after the Iowa caucuses, which will live on YouTube until the end of time. Hopefully you know what I'm talking about. And I sat there. You do or you don't?
I do.
Okay. Anyone who doesn't, everyone know Howard Dean the scream?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay. But, just real fast, what happened was Howard Dean was the front runner for the
Democrats. Wait, what year was this?
2004.
Okay.
Howard Dean was the front runner, and he lost the Iowa caucus, so he walks out into the room, and he came in third, and he was supposed to win the thing in a walk. And all of the college students who've been working for him are all depressed, so he wants to fire them up. So he's like, we're going to win this! We're going to go to, you know, Kansas, and we're going to go to California, and Massachusetts, and New Hampshire, and South Carolina, and North Carolina! And he's getting very high-pitched, screaming all the states they're going to go to. And unbeknownst to him on television, he looked like a crazy person, like, saying what their next targets were. And then he's screaming, and then we're going to go to Washington, D.C. and take back the White House! And then he did the following. Arr! Like, on national television. And I'm watching this in real time with my mouth gaped open, saying, his life is over. Did he know the cameras were... Because the kids in the room were like, yeah! The people at home were like, we want to give this nut nuclear launch codes? I do not think so. Did you ever hear President Dean?
Yeah.
He lost. So the Democrats made him the head of their freaking party, which I thought was amusing. But, so he lost. So, the same moment, Mike, that Harry Potter fans watched the trophy case scene, at that moment, we all sat up and were like, this is over. That was the Howard Dean scream moment.
I was like, at that moment, I was like, I hope Dumbledore dies, if only to get to see Gambin be thrown from 1,000 feet in the air. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm going to get up and cheer. Who's going to be with me in the movie theater?
Richard.
Yay! I'll
like, let's do the wave! Woo!
Jen, we have to see that movie together. We've said it over and over and over again.
We're having a summit for the next two movies.
Jen,
we have,
said,
to, have to.
Jen, how many summits have we planned?
We're really going to do this one,
Come
though.
Come on, all right.
We're going to do it.
Well, and we're really going to your wedding.
Okay.
We are. You better do invites, or I'll cry.
Am I invited?
You know what? We're just going to invite everybody. Come on.
Yeah, there's going to be an open invitation on the board. No.
Whatever.
Hope you have enough food.
Yeah, exactly. You coming from Utah?
Oh, of course.
There you go. You've been quiet tonight. What do you want to say about these chapters?
I've been too quiet.
You have been too quiet. Well, you're on the phone in Utah. Come on, you're new.
That's true. No, I don't know. Trying to think. Sorry.
Well, not a lot happened in these chapters. That's completely understandable. Oh. Nothing really happened in these chapters.
Of course not.
They were
dull, I don't know.
Very
Every
slow.
Time we would talk about Not, I just kept getting that image of him telling Iran that he was, or was it, screaming, "You're a Nicholas," at him. Did you catch that part?
What part was it?
It was where Iran was testing them on the ridiculous spell.
Oh, and he's yelling, "You're ridiculous, you're ridiculous, you're ridiculous."
Yeah,
yeah.
That makes me laugh every time.
Yeah, I mean, and I won't lie, my computer didn't read it to me correctly, so I didn't get the "you're," and I had no idea what the hell the joke was until I got home and read it again. Sometimes it happens. I'm a very busy person on a schedule.
I want to read one of my favorite quotes out of these chapters.
Okay.
It's the end of 87, and it's where Snape is talking to Harry about the saving people impulse.
Okay.
And he says, "You've been led to believe that you are the savior of the wizarding world. Let me assure you that you are not. You may be destined to face down Voldemort, but every human being is responsible for saving himself. Sometimes that requires sacrifice, but you are no one's guardian, Harry. It is not your place to take that choice away from anybody." And then he says, "Snape's dark eyes were sympathetic, yet resolute," which I think is absolutely perfect. "Nor, Harry, is it your right to do so." I'm like, how many times in canon did I want somebody to tell Harry that?
Yeah.
And I was so happy that he said it. And I love that sometimes her descriptive words to me are so dead on. They were sympathetic, yet resolute. Like he had to, I mean, somebody had to say it to Harry. That's one of my favorite lines.
You know, you see the same types of stories running over and over. And the theme that you see repeated over and over again is Harry doing this himself because this is his mission versus his friends who want to be there because we're all in this together and blah, 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 blah. But that is a great way to put it. The fact that we're in this, we're fighting this war. The fact that some prophecy involves you in a meaningful way does not mean that this is a fight that we would otherwise sit out. And you, Harry, have no right to force us to sit it out. And that really turns the tables back on Harry, because Harry is always the person who wants more access. He wants to be involved in the decision-making process. He wants to be... How often are we saying, if you just told Harry what was going on, none of this would have happened? He wants to be a player. He wants... involvement. And you saw way, way, way back earlier in the story, he wanted involvement. So find Snape forces him into the Pensieve to see, you know, essentially a muggle born family be, you know, murdered and gang raped and all of this awful stuff. Because you want to be involved. You damn it. You're going to be involved up to your neck. I mean, there's no half in, there's no half out. You can't be a little kid. You either want it or you don't. If Harry has decided that he's going to be involved, he has no right to then take that decision away from other people. I just thought that was a great, fabulous way of putting it. And towards that end, Jen, I have an equally strong and just wonderfully succinct quote, which I think captures this story very well, which I would like to share with you all. "Steak and chips with lots of ketchup slathered over the top of both. Draco called it a travesty of a fine cut of meat. Harry told him to shut up and eat his snails."
That was some great writing.
That's my life. That is every day of my life. I was actually sending my favorite quotes of this to Jen tonight as I was reading, and Jen thought I was trying to, like, you know, there was some hidden message in the quote. So, unfortunately, poor Jen.
I was just like, what? Because he just started randomly sending me quotes, and I'm like, what?
Are you trying to tell me that you're hungry?
My other point was when Draco wanted to take Harry's quills away from him because they were sharp, even though in Chapter 2, Harry actually stabbed a hole through his hand with a quill. So, you know, there's been some
precedent. I can't believe he used a knitting needle. These are huge.
Can I tell you, I was getting nervous that we would have such repetition of Harry snuck off and poked himself in the hand. Harry snuck off and poked himself in the wrist. Harry snuck off and poked. Like, it was so much, it was so graphic, I just, like, part of me just wanted to get to the point, get to the resolution. So at least when he grabbed that needle, and I'm not going to lie to you, I'm listening on my iPod today, I actually pulled up the story on my computer, and I actually scanned down. I didn't want to hear every word of it, and I actually jumped down, because I was afraid he would, like, open a vein and need to scream for help, or I didn't know what was going to happen.
You're on pins and needles, no pun intended.
But I was looking for the point where at least there would be, like, okay, there's no way this can happen without something shifting the story. But that, I thought, was great. I'm looking through the other ones here. So Draco is trying to take away all of Harry's quills, and he's arguing with Harry, and Snape's in the room as well, and Draco says, the other one's got a sharp point. And Harry says, so does my quill when it's in good shape. Snape cleared his throat. Draco, your interest in your brother's welfare is laudable, but I don't think Harry's compulsion is quite that generalized. All I can picture is Harry like, when you do, like, you know, the, like, you know, like, you know, remember when you're in, like, eighth grade, and you're dancing, and it's the slow song at the end of the eighth grade dance, and you think these people are gonna, you know, go far away, and you'll never see them again, even though you all live in the same town, and you're, and what the hell's the, like, the, what's the song you dance to, I'll Remember You, who's saying that,
Is it?
Celine Dion, what's the verse? I'll Remember You, Will You Remember Me, that song. Like, picture that music, and picture...
Oh, no, Sarah McLachlan.
Yeah, and picture that...
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, picture that music, and picture, you know, the Harry and Snape montage of all of their greatest hits. And picture in the very beginning, like, Harry smiling, Snape smiling, Wizard Scrabble, and then picture Harry stabbing his hand with a quill and it goes straight through the other side. Like, that's all I could picture in that scene.
Yeah, they're actually on Aspen's site.
Uh-huh.
There are some really interesting music videos that people have put together of different clips of the movies to explain the storyline. They put it to music.
Oh, really?
You're
on
YouTube. Oh, I should look that up after this. That sounds great.
Yeah,
but my other favorite moment I just do want to point out real fast is Snape coming, you know, out of his quarters, and he has, you know, a new jumper for Harry that's a little bit too big, and I forget the exact line, but he's like, Molly Weasley, I believe I'm on her Christmas list for life now. No one ever gets off this list. Once you're targeted, you're going to get a jumper every year.
And nobody wants.
And Harry's like, aww, I have a wonderful collection. Let's jump around and just say, like, some scenes from these chapters. One scene I just want to talk about real fast is I love the Quidditch match. Not, like, the Quidditch match itself, because it was insanely boring, but I just love the way it's described. Malfoy is going to keep this match going until they get 1,000 points to make up for the 1,000 points that Snape took away from Not. In
love the match.
I just thought that was hilarious. It got so freaking boring that, like, you know, the Hufflepuff play, like, that they weren't even looking for the Snitch anymore, and they were, like, doing homework, and
yeah,
Dumbledore, like, prevents the catastrophe by getting everyone their food delivered to their seats, and, you know, like, Draco's eating with his family in the middle of the match, and, like, the announcer even stopped announcing when, like, when Slytherin was getting points, because they got, like, 1,000 to 150, and it was, like, I just love the way that match was described. It was the most tedious affair. Like, Ron got so bored, he read his History of Magic book over Hermione's shoulder. Like, it was just, I just thought that was just,
love it!
And the way it was described was so funny, because no one ever thought, maybe we should leave, it's boring. Because, like, if I'm in a Red Sox game, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm probably gonna leave. And, like, we have to stay here until it's over. It's, like, the next day, and the birds are...
Red Sox fans aren't real fans.
Oh, don't even. Oh,
yeah,
Mike, we're having trouble hearing you. Mike, are you there? No, just kidding. But
I'm having flashbacks to last night.
I know, last night.
Special edition 7, everybody. We had some technical issues.
Yeah, we had some issues.
All of the men suddenly couldn't be heard. It was shocking.
It was
It was very traumatic, wasn't it, Jen? We just didn't know what to do with ourselves.
I know. We just had to talk about
Smut. We just had to talk about Smut. There was no getting around it.
Okay. All right. Hey, guys.
Hey, Ryan.
Hey, just for a moment, guys. I actually have to step away for a moment, but since I talk over everybody on this podcast and don't give anyone else a chance to speak, I am giving you 3 minutes of Ryan-free conversation. Take it away about a year like none other.
Okay. You're like,
thank God he's gone.
Aww, let's talk about Huggles. No. I love that name for him.
Okay. Kara, you have been kind of quiet. What is some of your favorite or things that you have thoughts of about these chapters?
You know, my favorite lighthearted moments, I guess. Well, relatively lighthearted moments. I think it's the last class that Harry and Draco have with Professor Aran, and they have to write the test and the paragraph about
died.
I totally copied that paragraph. It made me laugh so hard.
Chi, can you read that paragraph? That is just too funny not to.
I think Kara can do it because she has it up.
Oh, okay.
Do you have it? Yeah, I'm sorry. For some reason, I thought she was outside in the back of a pickup truck again or something. I forgot. You're not your cell phone.
No.
Okay. Read.
Says, K-Nai are called that because they come in cans, he'd written. The hardest part of the spell is actually the can opening phase. Many wizards over the years have died horrible, messy deaths when resentful K-Nai got trapped for too long in their magical cans. Eventually, the dogs break free, see? And when they do, they're really, really upset. And that's, I don't know, that just made me laugh. I love how he just didn't even care at that point.
I know. I laugh that part. And yet you know that it's wrong and bad, and yet you can't help but go. But
I love that Draco goes like, what are cans? Like, what's the point? I don't get it.
I love when Draco doesn't get the Muggle references. Like, the promise that, like, Harry makes of the, I think the stick a needle in my, what is that one? How does it go?
Cross my heart.
I cross my heart, hope to die. Stick a needle in my eye. And Draco was like, how can you even say that? That makes sense.
Oh my goodness. I like when he's trying to fill out the test, and I'm not really sure what chapter this is in. They have to write the questions out. Yeah, and he's like, is the reason you're not married because nobody is just willing to, like, roll you down the stairs every morning? It's just, like, so funny. It's the kind of things that, like, I've thought in classes and, like, have passed notes about, but have never, like, I can't imagine actually turning that in. I was having fits. I thought.
Oh, I know. I can't believe he turned it in.
I know.
That's really brave. He's really.
I don't remember. Did Snape ever end up seeing it?
Oh yeah, he sees.
Oh yeah. He brings it up. Doesn't he bring it up that he's read it and he?
He does. He starts reading the can one out loud to him. It's like, are you having any trouble with your defense against the dark arts? And he's like, No, I'm not. It's like, maybe explain this answer to me.
I was confused. No.
I like when Draco and Harry hug.
Oh, which the hug when after the
after the self-harm bit, Draco's like, it's gonna be all right, Harry, and they hug me. Pats Harry on the back.
I thought that was a little bit over the top. I don't think that, really? Does Aspen have brothers? Because.
I don't know.
Well, normally you never, like, that was a pretty serious moment, I mean.
Okay, but seriously, it was a big step for Draco. I was like, okay. Yay, Draco!
Seriously, like, my brother.
Goals. It was kind
okay,
of
when my brother found out I had depression, okay, first of all, nobody had told him, so he was kind of pissed. Secondly, he pats me on the shoulder and he goes, well, are you going to be okay? And I was like, I think so. He's like, all right, I'm going to go play Text Twist. It's like,
yeah, great. I think it's also just, exactly. You know, case to case kind of thing too.
That's true,
I mean, I have four brothers and they're all different, and, you know, some of them would give you a hug after that and some of them would just be like, whatever, I don't care. You know?
Yeah. So.
Well, I mean, it's not that he's whatever, I don't care. It's just that he's not really sure how to handle.
Right.
My brother's very much the boys are stereotypical man.
I think boys are different with other boys than they are with boys with girls.
Yeah, but
I've definitely noticed.
What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, like, if a girl is crying and their friends and or even going out or anything, a boy would hug her or hold her or do something to help her. If a guy
try to stop the tears,
if a guy is crying next to a guy, you know, it may be like a punch in the shoulder or come on, you know, or he'll just sit there with him quietly. Like, I don't think boys and boys share as much physical. I don't know. At least the boys that I've seen, it's unmanly to show physical compassion or something to another man without the undertones of it being gay or that kind of thing.
I agree. But I think it might be a little different within family. I agree with you 100% for like, I would never hug a male friend of mine, to be honest. I can't imagine a scenario.
Really?
To be quite honest, I just can't imagine a scenario where I'm hugging some random male friend of mine.
Wow. James has that, man hug where you, like, pound the other guy's back. For, like,
And then Zach does that thing where they, like, shake hands and then pound each other on the back and pull.
That's
man hugging.
That I've done, but I can't imagine this like a regular hug kind of thing to a friend.
But see, I've never had brothers, and I've not been around brothers, really. Can't give an opinion on if brothers... I know that sisters... I know I have a sister, and I know that Harry and Draco act very much like me and my sister would.
Well, I mean...
So I don't know. Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, my brothers, they have more brothers than they do sisters, because I'm the only girl. And so I see them interacting more with each other than, you know, with me. And so just from observing just, you know, them, they're all so vastly different. You know, I mean, some of them would do something like that, you know, like I said before. And it wouldn't be, like, all simpering and, like, oh, everything's going to be all right. But, I mean, you know, if a hug's needed, a hug's needed, and... There's no shame in hugging your brother, whether he be your younger brother older brother.
There's no shame at all.
Shame in it. I'm just saying I'm not really sure. Normally, Draco has never had a brother, whatever.
That's true.
Harry's had Ron, though. Have they ever hugged? In canon, did Ron ever hug Harry? I'm sure that they did. I just can't recall.
They're thumpers. They're thumpers, yeah. But most, like, British men are that way. I mean, British men tend to be a lot more, this is my personal space and this is your personal space. Like, they're not
More touchy-feely than Americans were. I mean, if we're going on that, I did a study in college and we had to do, like, the different social compatibilities with people. Like, we're saying, like, the people, like, there were some people in Africa, or was it Chinese? I can't remember, but they liked, like, a 3-foot distance between that's their comfort space.
Yeah.
Their comfort circle is what they call it.
Well, it's because we have so much space in America, but in Europe, they don't have as much, you know,
thought they were more touchy-feely. So I don't know. I know that we were doing Mexico and, like, they could be very close, like, proximity. Like, they're comfortable talking to you closer to your face than, like, normal Americans or... I don't know. It was just a really interesting study to see the different...
Hang on. I'm back, everybody. Chi, are you saying that people in Europe stand closer together because the landmass is smaller?
Well, here's the theory, okay? And this is what I'm talking about from, like, sociology and things like that that I've taken, is that because, like, especially if you go over to Asia or the urban centers in Europe, you know, like, if anytime you walk down a street, it's not like in America where, okay, if you're walking down the street in good old Gardner, Kansas, right, and you're walking next to your best friend, there's always, like, 6 inches between you, right? Mm-hmm. So you have room to, like, swing your arms and gesture wildly with your hands. Uh-huh. And then if somebody approaches you, you know, you give them the berth. You know, you give them at least 2 feet to pass
there's
on either side of you.
there's a comfort zone. Whereas in Europe, they just don't have the space for that in the urban cities because there's so many people in such a compact, you know, space. They don't have that, you know.
That they're more comfortable with being close.
They're more comfortable because of that.
I don't know.
Well, Ryan, you grew up in the city. Did you ever play the game when you were a kid? I know me and my friends used to do this all the time in the city, where you walk in a straight line down the street and you don't step aside for other people, and you see, kind of play chicken with them, and you see when they jump.
I actually do that, like, in the present day. I actually do that now. Like, I did,
yeah, really?
I did that last Saturday, I believe. You know what I am? It's like, you know how old people get in their cars and they just back out onto busy streets without looking because they don't give a damn?
Right.
Yeah, I'm kind of like that now, just in the way I walk. That's kind of like me. I'm just throwing that out there for consideration. I just want to say one thing, though, because I believe I overheard while I was gone the man-hug debate, the great man-hug debate.
The man-hug. Oh, good.
Another one thing to consider. Like, Meg, are you back?
Hi.
Hey, Meg. How are you?
Hi, Meg.
Good.
Meg has chimed in for this important discussion of man-hugging. Now, Meg, you have two sons. Now, they are like a year and a few months apart.
Yep.
Now, I just have to say, you know, you must have had a fun couple of years. All right. So, you have two sons very close together in age. So, they are going to grow up, and they are probably going to scream at each other, and they are probably going to throw things at each other, and they're probably going to light your house on fire, and your hair will be white within 10 years, correct?
Probably.
Okay. Now, I want you to feel good about this, Mitch. My goal here is not to depress you. I want you to feel good about this.
I'm like, yes.
All right. Now, like I was saying earlier, you know, growing up, they're going to be, you know, fighting, arguing. When they're much older, you know, when you're in the home, they're probably going to be more civil towards each other. But, you know, they live their entire lives with each other. I think it's different that Draco and Harry came together as 16-year-olds. And that, you know, the fact that, you know, he has a different relationship with Draco than he will with Ron, because he and Ron grew up together, whereas Draco and Harry kind of were thrust together in the last few months. So their interactions, just as their interactions with their father, Snape, are going to be just, you know, weird from the norm just because of the circumstances, is my thought. Now, talk to us, Meg, about Ron.
What have you guys talked about so far?
We have talked about why Star Trek Voyager is a terrible TV show. Jen has commented four times on her thoughts on Draco's betrayal. Four times.
I have?
Well, we asked you four times. You only answered once.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yes.
Well, tell me what you guys all thought of Ron in these last
No, Meg, I'm sorry. That's not how this works.
I really want to know. I just want to see.
We asked you first.
In what regards?
Just the character of her. I mean, I'm joking.
We haven't discussed him yet, really. So anything.
Yeah, I'm just joking. I mean, you're the official president of the Ron Weasley fan club, so it seems a natural character.
That's true. Self-appointed president.
Yeah. Talk to us about Ron in this fic. Like, what were your thoughts? Like, you hinted last week that you weren't the biggest fan of it because you thought it was more one or two dimensional. I mean,
well, I'm not really a fan of fanfic Ron anyway, with maybe the exception of him in After the End, because he's almost better in that than in canon, but which is, you know, hard for me to admit, but there you are. So I probably would still agree with that. I don't know, he's not really that much of a major player in this fic, really.
I saw him as an interesting, like, almost like a barometer, because in as we, like, close down the podcast tonight, as we get near the end of this tonight, let's move this towards a discussion of the entire fic itself, because we're going to have an interview with Aspen in a few minutes, but we're going to wind down our discussion of A Year Like None Other. When we started this fic, I had never read anything like this before. I am a canon dweeb. I'm always saying, well, this never happened in the canon. It's probably going to be what happened. I came into this of that mindset. I was very open to liking this fic. I didn't know if I would. Jen and I exchanged frantic emails with a friend. Like it. This will be morbid. I'll have to change my name. You can't do this to me. It's only 96 chapters. Can you read it in an hour and let me know what you think? It was all. So, I mean, like, this is like the big question mark. How would I take a fic like this, you know, weeks ago? And I laid out, you know, what I said needed to happen in the beginning. It needs to take me from A to B. It needs to prove to me why it's doing certain things. And it needs, like, you need to teach me why Snape is a great parent for Harry. And I had certainly many issues with it along the way, but at the end, I'm very happy with it. I'm glad I read this book. I really enjoyed this discussion. I don't think there's any way it could have been seamless. And I certainly think that we will not find many authors who put the level of detail into it that Asman put. But the character of Ron, to me, was a barometer along the way. If Ron responded angrily, that's how he should respond. And, like, Ron almost played, in my mind, the character, like, picture your typical Harry Potter fan who reads the books, watches the movies, isn't in the fandom, you know, knows the characters, likes the story, but isn't as, like, much of an uber geek as we are. That's kind of like the character of Ron here, and Hermione to an extent as well. So that when Ron is told, you know, Snape, you know, has adopted Harry, Ron's like, what? Because that's what a traditional fan would say. And along the way he responds to it, if done well, I think shows the level of realism asked and put into the plot. So at the end of the story, and one thing I just want to comment on is at the end of the story, you have, you know, Hermione and Draco are making, or were they making sorbet? I can't remember. They're gelato. Were they making gelato? They weren't making ice cream.
Probably. That sounds sort of Jen, like the hoity-toity Draco of this fic.
I guess. Oh my gosh, I don't know the details.
Chidi, you remember?
I'm having trouble remembering.
Sometimes I like to ask pop questions in the middle of a sentence to see how many people
like,
have left. I get a busy signal from Chi. Mike's not here. Jen's
I'm back.
Here
what are we trying to remember?
I'm searching frantically.
Draco and Hermione.
And Hermione made what? What type of ice cream?
Oh, lemon lime gelato.
Gelato, thank you. I mean, you
good
have
job,
you
me.
Have you have Hermione, you know, tutoring Goyle, and you have Draco. Like the scene that really made the whole journey worth it was I loved the end of semester scene. I loved, you know, I have a few house points to award. I thought it was great. It's like, you know, Hermione gets 100 points for discovering dyslexia. And some random Gryffindor got 5 points for doing something ridiculous. And, like, this Hufflepuff got 20 points for, you know, helping the old lady across the street. Like, ridiculous stuff we never see. And then, you know, Draco gets 150 points for, you know, this fixed equivalent of outstanding courage. And he wins the House Cup. And it's the mirror image of Philosopher's Stone. And I love it. It's like Hermione and Ron go over to congratulate him. And he is himself, he is snarky, but he is accepting of that. And it just, the whole thing is, and they walk out of the Great Hall, you know, at some points later in the fic, and they're all kind of like walking with each other, and they're arguing, but they're laughing at the same time. And the fic convinced me that you can take these characters and make them allies, and you can make them friends. And that, to me, was worth it. And I don't think it could have been possible if Ron didn't have huge issues with it, if Ron wasn't annoying, and if Hermione wasn't calling DSS. And a lot of, I mean, you needed to have that in there. So my conclusion on A Year Like None Other, as we go into the Aspen interview, is I'm really glad I read it. I'm hoping that when I read my first Harry Hermione fic, I will have, you know, as good of a time reading it and, you know, as good of a reaction to it being not the normal thing I tend to read. I'm pleased. I think there were certainly some things that I don't think I reacted to the way she hoped. I'm not the reader she's probably going after. I mean, she probably doesn't care what I particularly think because she's writing for a lot of people. I think there's readers out there who would respond to the same scene and say it was too weak as opposed to over the top. So I don't know. But I definitely think it was definitely worth it. And Jen gets all the credit for that because she's the one who asked us to do it. So.
I've been cheated.
Yeah. Jen bribed me.
I'm just happy that you got through it. Yay!
Ryan survived a year like none other. Yay!
Well, because way back when Ryan and Jen first met, we did a fake exchange thing. Yeah.
I made Jen. Oh, no, that's right. It was Psychic Serpent, right?
Yeah, it was Barb's trilogy. I hadn't read it, and he would read this story.
Yeah, the fic, just to point this out, the fic exchange was like February 15th. Jen read the thing in 3 days. I finished a year like none other 4 hours ago. So just to point out how well I can be trusted.
I'm so giddy that we finally have reached this moment. I feel like we need to commemorate somehow. Forget it. You can't say it. We can't do it. But I'm very excited. I'm so excited that we got to do this fic, and that I'm just so pleased that everyone didn't come out of it going, Jen, oh my God.
Well, no, in fairness, there's some people who can't do it. I mean, there's noticeably, there's some people who are part of the show who haven't been in these episodes. I mean, Rinna just isn't a fan of the story. Some other members, just, they're not fans, but that's okay. I mean, if you give me a Draco Hermione fic, I may love it or I may hate it, depending on who writes it and just what I think of it. I mean, there's some things you just can't do. Some people just can't buy into certain things, and that's fine. But I think that for those of you who can buy into Snape Adopts Harry, there's a lot to appreciate about this story. I mean, I think if Aspen wrote, a Harry Ginny fic, I think a lot of the people who maybe didn't like this story would love it. I mean, it all just comes down to personal preference. I mean, I had difficulty with the SI scenes tonight, but my reason was maybe that just wasn't what I felt like reading today. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like a lot of it's preference, and the author can't go by that.
I think it was an interesting journey we took as a podcast. It was the first story of this sort that I've ever read, and made it all the way through. I enjoyed it. I thought it was very well written. I'm still going to always prefer the, angsty romantic stories, because that's just me. But, I mean, there was a lot of really good stuff in this story, and it kind of interestingly paralleled my life at some points. So, it was, I thought that.
How was that for you?
You're
going through it as you're reading it. Like, was it healing? Was it helpful? Was it?
Last night was hard. I knew if I was gonna read it all, I had to read it all in one go. Cause I knew it was coming up. And, I mentioned it before, but, my best friend in high school, was a cutter. And, I almost lost her to depression and to self-injury. And, my depression had not chosen to take that course, but I can understand the thinking in it, because you get so frustrated with being unable to feel anything, feeling apathetic is the worst feeling in the world, because you really should be able to feel something, in almost any given situation. I don't like being somebody, I don't like for Ryan to ask me a question like, gee, what do you think about this? And me go, eh, not even being able to articulate anything that I'm feeling because I'm not feeling anything. And so I understand the desperation and wanting to get out of that cycle. And, so that was personally very hard for me to get through last night. Mm-hmm. Just because the cycle of it is so very real.
Do you find it could be helpful for some people who are maybe in that? I mean, I know this, your depression obviously didn't take that route, but it seems like it's so realistic that anyone reading it who knows someone who has gone through that or has gone through that or is going through that, it has to jump out at them. And the reason I'm asking this question is I know Jen said when she was misdiagnosed with cancer a couple weeks ago, she wanted to read Healing Fix. She wanted to find, hope from fan fiction. And unfortunately, she read all the ones where Harry died, so that plan was, unsuccessful, but yeah, Jen, I wish we could have helped you. But, I'm just curious. I mean,
is it helpful or is that?
Jen, you too. Do you think it can be helpful or do you think it can be?
I think it depends on your point of view and your mindset at the time.
Really. No, I think there's a lot to be said of the fact that a majority, I'll even go so far as to say a majority, I think a lot of fics deal with present day problems, raping, kidnapping, SI, abuse of some kind, whether it be physical, where the Dursleys are horribly physically violent, or mentally and emotionally, and Harry's struggle. I think it does help readers. I think that's the same with anybody reading poetry or real fiction or self-help books, anything where something can be explained in a sense where you can relate to it on a personal level. I think it's worth writing and reading about. I personally look forward for that kind of thing. I think some things that are personally difficult for us to read, maybe that's not what we look for very much.
Yeah.
If things are too, if it's too soon, if it's still too raw to deal with, those aren't the things that you particularly look for. But I think writing is an extremely expressive and creative way to express getting your thoughts and your feelings and your emotions down on paper and putting it into these characters that you love so much, and in helping them deal with it. I think sometimes it helps yourself. And I do truly believe that it does. There are stories out there that do help people. I think this is a great story for anyone who is dealing with family problems or dealing with emotional things that you can't comprehend or understand or even get your head around it at times. That stories like this, I find, are encouraging.
It's hopeful, Harry, you know, like literally this is an extreme case, but for a kid who's being literally crucified with thousands of needles in his body, or for, you know, someone who's being abused by his father, you know, who is in like the rich, you know, regal lifestyle, you know, who is trapped and wants a family more like the Weasleys, or wants someone to just love him and not have to worry about money or power or status. I mean, it's hopeful. I mean, it shows that you, like, each of the three men in the story, you know, Harry, Snape, and Draco, they come from a crappy place and they find each other. And that's, even if you don't like the fact that Snape should be portrayed that way, or even if you think that Draco is a little ass, you can at least look at the story that Aston wanted to write, which was three people with crappy lives coming together and finding each other. Call one of them Harry and call one of them Draco if you want, if that helps you, you know, be drawn into the story more. But it's still a hopeful story. I mean, it's like, for those of you, it's like Battlestar Galactica, the pilot movie. You have a woman who, very successful, you know, government official, 10 a.m. in the morning, she's diagnosed. You have terminal cancer, you have a year to live, and you're going to die. And she, you know, she has to go to work that day. And how, my God, like, how do you focus on anything after hearing that? And then, you know, at 3 p.m, there's a nuclear holocaust, and, you know, the entire world is destroyed, and all of a sudden she's now the president. And you have to deal with, you know, all of these people who have died and saving the people who lived, and you have all of these inhumane, you know, decisions that you never thought you'd have to make, and all you can think of is, I have cancer and I'm going to die. I mean, but the fact that that character is able to deal with that gives you hope that even if you have cancer, like, it's an absurd thought, but even if you find out you have this, you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. You may live longer than anyone. I mean, look at Jen. I mean, Jen, you know, no, seriously, I mean, we all got together.
Do this.
No, we all got together and we're like, and we thought that, you know, it was a very hopeless situation. And then all of a sudden the next day, you never freaking know what's going to happen when your phone rings and you find out it was all a mistake. I mean,
that's for sure. You never know.
You never know. So you can't lose. And I have told Jen many times, she is going to outlive me by many, many freaking years. And Jen and I have actually formed a pact. Whichever one of us outlives the other needs to attend the other's funeral and actually play Potterfic Weekly blooper reels at the other's funeral. And the survivor gets to choose the clips is the gag we're going to play.
The survivor gets to choose.
Well, then you know Jen's going to outlive you.
Oh, if Jen, all I can tell you is,
she's just determined.
If you were concerned about your reputation, you had better go last. That's all I can tell you, because if you go first, it's not going to be pretty.
That's right, Ryan.
The best of Jen. This is when Jen was attacked, but you're going to love this one.
All right, let's remember.
This is when Jen was podcasting in a tornado. Jen was, yeah.
Oh, Lady Chi, you better seriously outlive. Like, this is Lady Chi hanging onto a lazy boy dry heaving. Oh, God. But, special edition 7. Look it up.
Oh, goodness.
We're doing dry heaving on Aspen's Poor Podcast here.
Oh, no.
Kira, Meg, and Mike, final thoughts. You're like none other.
Final thoughts. Overall, since you guys already hit on a lot of points, I wanted to also point out that I like how this story, you know, kind of shows you that it's okay to express your feelings, and it's okay to admit when you need help, and it's okay to think that you're a little crazy because maybe you are, maybe you aren't, you know, and bad things are going to happen to anyone, to good people, to bad people, but everyone can overcome that, you know, and your worst enemy could, you know, one day become the person you're most dependent upon, the person you love the most. You just have to give them a chance. You know, I mean, it took her, you know, almost 100 chapters to show, but it was perfect pacing, in my opinion, even, you know, the slow parts and perfect pacing. And, you know, she took her time and she created such an incredible, intense world that I don't think anyone knew it was coming to them when they first start, you know, when they first picked up this story. And, you know, the first couple of chapters, you know, they're on the shorter side. You know, maybe you're questioning it a little bit. But once you, you know, invested a little bit of time in it, you started to realize that, you know, you were getting yourself into something that was really incredible. And you, even if you disagreed with, you know, bits and pieces of it, you knew that if you kept going, that something was going to work itself out. And I don't know. I mean, cause, you know, this is only my second time being on the show, but from listening to past episodes, it was very clear when, you know, people thought that there's something off or there's something wrong, but you guys knew even at that time that something was going to happen and your mind was going to be changed. And I think that's, you know, as she was writing, I don't know if that was her intention or not, but the fact that it happened proves that, you know, she did something right.
I mean, it's, and I said this a few weeks ago, it's like, for example, if you know two brilliant people with, like, gray matter leaking out of their ears, they're so freaking brilliant, and they both disagree with each other passionately about, you know, an issue of the day, you know, death penalty or whatever, you can have people who strongly, you know, may disagree on, you know, the role of Snape or the role of Harry or the way you write these things, but you really can't say that even people who disagree with what Aspen writes, you can't come into it saying it's not well planned or that it's thrown together or that, you know, it's completely unrealistic, because it's not. I mean, you may not like it. Like, I may have had bad cheese today and not have been up for, you know, listening to, like, you know, the topic of the final chapters, but I may
somebody's going to get fed up with us and eventually send us good cheese. You
yes,
realize that.
I, like, seriously, people, what do you want? Cheese. My birthday is coming up in January. What kind of hints do you people want?
You know, from the land of the cheese.
Yeah, but it's honestly, you can't, even those who, from everyone who loves the story to those who don't, there's certain things you just can't say about it. And for a story that, you know, based on just what it's about, the fact that it probably, just the one-liner probably instantly turns off so much of the fandom until they really think about it and sit down and read it. It's tough. It's advertising. It's like the politician who gets up, who says, I'm going to raise your taxes if you elect me, but hear me out. It's hard to do that and then have people listen to you. You're from Utah. You people hate that there. But it's like, you have to, you know, it's tough. I mean, it's easy to write, oh, here's a Harry Ginny fic. It's just like canon. Oh, it's wonderful. Go read it. And people will probably flock to it. You know, it's hard to be different. That's just my take there.
Okay. I'm glad I read it because I've never read anything like this before. I've always, well, actually, when I started reading A Year Like None Other, I'd never read anything like this before. But in the course of talking with Jen, I've read some really weird stuff now. So
since then, I have changed.
I read Snape Hermione fix, and there you are.
I know this isn't like the, this isn't
like. Thing.
No, it's not.
Like everybody's it's, like, yeah, Jen. Mm-hmm.
No, this isn't. Like, I know this isn't Jen's annual like roast, but every I call my girlfriend all the time now, and ever since I met Jen and she met Jen, I'm always like, hey, how's up? Oh, yeah, I'm just reading Smut. What's up with you? So just throwing that out there.
Continue. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Ryan, have you had a chance to listen to Tuesday's episode?
I have not yet had a chance to listen to Special Edition number 7. I will be doing that tomorrow.
Oh my goodness.
What a treat.
Meg, continue. Hold on. We're not letting Meg off the hook.
Okay, so I'm happy I read the fic. I have to say, I will probably never read a Snape adopting Harry fic again. Because I just don't like them. But.
Yeah, that's fair.
But as far as. For something where I was really dead set against the premise to begin with, I think that she did a good job with it as best as could possibly be done. And I certainly understand why so many people love it. Like, I just don't. Is that bad?
No, it's not bad. No, I mean, that,
I feel bad.
Let's be fair here. I mean, but and that's the thing we always say in this. We thank the authors for being so great and letting us, you know, it's tough. It's like some people don't like to read small complaints, and we're up here for 37 hours, you know, with a lot of complaints. But it's, I mean, some people don't like American cars, and that's okay. You can have a really great American car, which is probably the only American car you would ever think of driving, but you may just not be a fan. I mean, the premise is the premise, and she can't make Snape and canon a better guy, and she did the best job that she could with this, and some people think it's the best fic ever. Some people thought it was incredibly moving. Some people thought, you know, it just, you know, it was well-written, but I just can't buy into it, and that's fine. I mean, it's
just the category I would file myself under, because I think the writing is excellent. So,
I think,
you know,
yeah,
there's not much.
No, I think it's great that you're.
I feel like I don't want to say it's not you, it's me, but that's how I feel.
That's totally cool. That's totally cool. I mean, one thing I'll say is this. I think what I said earlier today was very apt when I said that this is a story about three people who find each other late in life after having extraordinary challenges in their lives. I think it's a different way of reimagining the Harry Potter universe and using the same characters but telling a completely different story, and that's not everybody's thing. I mean, granted, the fact that you love, you know, Draco, Hermione at the same time means that you're a deeply troubled person and you need therapy, but I mean, we'll get to that later, but that's totally fair.
Well, but honestly, it's opened my eyes to reading some other different things, and it's not as though I won't read anything that's non-canon now. It's just that particular premise is not something I can buy into. I don't think it has anything to do with... You see what I'm saying? I don't think it's anything that could ever be changed.
It does, and we love the fact that you're from Wisconsin and that you're apologizing for not liking somebody else's car.
Just saying!
I don't love it. Do you hate me? I don't love this.
No, well, that said,
I don't love this. Is that okay?
Don't regret reading it.
Can I just tell you, this is early Jen. Jen, are you still awake?
Uh-huh.
Are you dying?
I'm here.
Okay. Are you falling asleep? Jen's time delayed medication. Yes. Jen, do you need to go to sleep?
No, I'm here. I'm listening.
Okay, we'll go fast. Jen once, she didn't like something. I think it was a Melinda's fic, and she felt so bad that she didn't like it. She was like, is that okay? Is it okay if I don't like this? And that's absolutely cool. So.
And then she got over it.
She got over it. Mama's like, she felt so bad, she loved it.
So there, that's me coming clean. But, you know, I mean, I like different aspects of it.
There's some fics that I can't picture, and I can't read it because I can't picture them.
We discussed those fics on Tuesday, Jen.
Oh, yes. Bestiality is one of them.
Oh, God. Mike, your thoughts on A Year Like None Other, quickly.
I love A Year Like None Other. It's one of my favorite stories of all time. I think I'm the opposite of a lot of you guys, that this is the kind of story I like, and it's the very strict canon stories that kind of bore me and I don't get into. I also like it because I would have never found the board if not for this story. I came to you guys through this.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm with you.
Aspen in the sunlight, bringing people together.
There you go. And I think you guys said most of the big things. The one other thing I'd add is, as someone who reads a lot of Slytherin sort of stories and who's in touch with like the Slytherin side, I like that she addresses a lot of the problems you always hear Slytherin fans talking about, like Dumbledore takes the house cup away from Slytherin, how rude is that? Or, you know, Draco and Snape are portrayed as these one-dimensional characters. You never see what they're thinking. And on and on and on. And I think she does a good job of kind of not only the family, obviously the family aspect's the main part of it. The, like Ryan said, the troubled, three troubled people kind of working together and so on. But I do also like that she kind of, makes Slytherin real and fleshes it out in a way you don't see in canon and makes it so it's not this one-dimensional house with, you know, a quarter of all the kids become evil automatically because they're thrown into Slytherin.
Right. And I was sad the canon didn't do that. The canon never really fixed that. That was such a great area. And I just want to say this too. I mean, if anyone who's listened to the show since the beginning, when we did the earlier fix, we went, you know, chronologically in order, chapter by chapter, of all the chapters we were discussing that week. And that's how she tried to start us off tonight. God bless her. And it's one of those things where we are so crazy, we have difficulty sticking to timelines, and we just want to talk about what we want to talk about. And we almost missed the best part of the fic. And I would like to close with that tonight, because I think this best captures why, how, regardless of, you know, what you think of the story type, why you have to just love Aspen sometimes. So Harry turns Lucius Malfoy into essentially a gargoyle of some kind, turns him into a stone monument. And they decide they are going to, have the sculpture of Lucius, you know, rest at Hogwarts. And everyone goes to the ceremony and Narcissa is there and, you know, Lucius is there in the form of, and Remus is interacting as Lucius. And you're thinking, this is weird. Like, it's just like a throwaway scene. Is it the end? Is this going to be the scene where Draco cries and has a moment? Because we're right near the end of the fic. And they put the monument right underneath the owlry, surrounded by pansies, where all of the owls will shit on him for the next 5,000 years. Aspen, I realize in some of our episodes we've been cranky. I realize at some points, you know, we may have been overly critical. But for that, I am naming my first child Aspen. Arabella and Jenya be damned.
Oh. Man, that really is something. Damn. I hope that Aspen Ryan, you know, really appreciates that.
It's better than Draco Snape.
Oh, wait, is your last name Ryan?
No, it's my first name.
That's what I thought.
So.
Yeah, but I didn't want to, like, announce his last name to the world.
I could be the lieutenant governor of Massachusetts, for all you people know. But, the fact that I didn't know where that scene was going and she manages to turn him, and I got it right before the characters did. I'm like, you're putting him under all of the owls. I love you.
Definitely won't be out this Severus.
Dumbledore has some balls.
I love this fic. I'm so glad we were able to do it. It is definitely one of my top three. It's definitely, well, top seven. I have like so many. Oh, but God. This one's
what are your top
way-
six?
I'll tell you later, I promise. But this is
she
definitely...
She has 30 seconds of battery life. Yeah, Jen, go.
This is the only story that I have stuck with for years. Like, seriously, years. I've been reading this story every... I remember when they used to come out weekly, and every Tuesday I'd grasp at the computer and await the new chapter. And, like, every week it was just... I don't know if y'all do any of the favorite author update things, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
But there are some that I just skip and I go and I reread when there's, I don't know, 5 chapters more, 6, 10 chapters I wait till it's finished. But this one, I mean, every week it was just, I couldn't wait to get to the new chapter. And, I'm just so glad that we got to do it. This story has touched me and helped me, and it's so emotionally inspiring, and yet it deals with so many problems that at the time I know it helped me get through a couple of things. And
right, Jen, did you have anything going on in your life?
What? Well, I wasn't cutting myself.
Well, I know that. Jen. I joke. Jen's like, when Jen says I had to get through a couple of things, that means, like, you know, like she's being shot at. Like, Jen doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
So.
No, never been shot at.
I actually wanted to mention that. I know you guys were talking about the self-injury before. Were you talking about that earlier on the podcast, too? I just wanted to say that that is one of the things that was hard for me to read in this fic. But I'm glad it was in there. Because I also know people that do that. And I almost lost someone very close to me because of that. And I talked with her about this fic a little bit. And I asked her if somebody who did that type of thing would want to read something like that. And she said, I would. And I would like to be able to commiserate with a familiar character, is what she said.
If Harry Potter has cancer, and if Harry Potter cuts himself, and if Harry Potter does all the stuff, then I can too.
Right. And well, I mean, it sounds fake, kind of...
He died.
Yeah.
Wrong fic.
Well, not... Okay.
But, so I did actually... I mean, it was hard for me to read.
Yeah.
Well, but at the same time...
This is a tough thing for you, but this is a very recent thing that's happened in your life, like, as we've been covering the fic. I mean, this is...
Mm-hmm.
This is... So, it's like the same thing with Lady Chi. I mean, it's... Yeah, it's difficult to... I mean, a lot of people come to the fandom for a respite. They need to get away from their own lives. So it's an interesting dynamic when you escape, and the place you escape is very similar to where you just left. So, but yeah, I think it's hopeful. I think the fact that Harry Potter can survive this thing gives people who look up to Harry Potter hope.
Yeah, I agree.
Actually, the person I spoke with said that she would be surprised if Harry in real life wouldn't do something like that.
Well, that's why I can't... No, that's exactly it. That's why I can't say... I had difficulty reading it, because it's hard to see a character like Harry go through that. And it's not like, you know, he's being tortured for 6 paragraphs, and then it's all the recovery. It's we're watching, you know, for chapters and chapters and chapters and chapters, you know, him do this to himself over and over and over and over. It's tough to listen to, or read, or in my case, listen to, but...
Well, it's hard to watch somebody do that in real life. It's hard to hear about people doing that to themselves in real... I know that when I was working in DAP, kids would come in, and they would do horrible things, and you would go, oh my gosh, why are they doing that? And it's their way of crying out for help or dealing or... And it's horrible, and I don't think in any circumstance it's easy to take or easy to hear or easy to read in any circumstance.
Yeah, I mean,
and so it's especially hard to a character that we love so much, but in the real world, who wants to hear things about the awful things that are behind closed doors that people don't talk about? And
there's no and there's no way that Harry would not have something like this happen. I expressed surprise earlier that it didn't happen earlier in the fic after Samhain, but the fact that it happened at all was definitely realistic. And Joe Rowling did not write, we've said this 1,000 times, Joe Rowling did not write realistic portrayals of human development. She did not. Harry would be in an institution and the Dursleys would be under arrest if that were true, and it didn't happen that way. That's not the story she wrote. She wanted to write... Like, here's the thing. If all stories were written realistically, then, you know, Cinderella would suffer, you know, post-traumatic stress based on the way that she's treated. It's like,
seriously.
Yeah, I mean, that's not how all stories go. But the fact that Aspen went that way is entirely plausible and realistic.
And so would Buffy.
That is Jen's little way of saying, Ryan, watch the damn Buffy DVDs I mailed you.
She's a sneaky one.
She really is.
Buddy.
Well, no. I'll just have you know, when I thought you had 4 months to live, I was going to watch every single one of them in one day so I could comment on all of them to you.
Oh, I'm dying tomorrow.
No, you're not. Stop it.
Jen, stop using death as a means to get things. Come on now.
Could you imagine if I watched the entire series and then bought Jen Equus tickets and then she, like, lived? Like, after that, I'd be like,
I would
faker.
So live. I'm reading the comments that people have left from the last episode, and I loved your comment about if I'm going to live for anything, it's going to see Dan Radcliffe naked on Broadway. I'm like, for sure.
The key to Jen's long-term survival, it rests in Dan Radcliffe's penis.
That's so true. And my butt doctor.
All right, tell you what. Let's get out of here and let's get over to the interview with Aspen and her beta, whose name I will learn to pronounce by the time we actually...
Mercury!
Mercury's, not to be confused with...
Or Mercury.
CDs.
Thank you, Mike from Brooklyn. All right. With that, it's been great. It's been real. And we'll see you all in about 6 seconds. And see you there. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.